Wendy, you know who I'm worried about? I'm worried about Kevin, our producer.
For what?
Well, for several reasons.
I know. That's why I'm wondering which one you're going to bring
there's
up.
There's a lot of different reasons I'm worried about Kevin. One of them has to do with our Chicago Blackhawks. He was obviously jealous toward you. You have a superstition or two revolving around the Blackhawks. And Kevin said to me with big, bright eyes, he goes, I have to be honest. You weren't even in yet. He goes, I have to be honest. I know Wendy thinks her superstition is what's making the Blackhawks win, and it's not. It's me. I'm making the Blackhawks win.
I've just been quiet about it. Like, all last week when you guys were talking about it, I decided not to divulge because I'm that superstitious about it.
Yeah.
And it's real.
All right. Listen listen to this.
It's real. Yeah,
and I want to point out, Dave Ennett has been kind enough to stay after Steve's show.
Speaking of superstitions.
After superstitions, because of the fact that we noticed last week that whenever Dave gets bumped off of Steve's show and does the Hawkopedia on our show, Dave 2-0 in terms of those days. So today is a big day, so you've been kind enough to stay, and we appreciate that.
My pleasure.
We really do. All right, Kevin, explain away. Tell everybody what you have that's making the Blackhawks win.
Well, it's your standard Wrigley Winter Classic Taves sweater.
Yeah.
That I've worn for the first two games of the series that they had won. No big deal. I didn't wear it during the day or anything, just during the game itself.
Sure. You put it on at game time.
Exactly. So this past Saturday, I'm at a friend's bachelor party, and we're playing some, like, you know, foot street hockey. And then
That's a good bachelor party, by
the way. It was a lot of fun, honestly.
We did that at my bachelor party, too.
Really?
Yeah, it was fun.
It was a great time.
Yeah.
But so anyway, the game kind of ran into the first period, so I'm not wearing the Hawks or the Taves sweater, and they go down 3-1, right? And I'm not watching at all. I'm just tracking on my phone here and there. Intermission comes, and I put it on, and I'm outside still for the start of the second period. And the second I walk into the living room to start watching the game, not 2 seconds later, does Anisimov score that goal.
Yeah.
And then they continue scoring. I'm telling you. It's
five
real.
Unanswered goals while Kevin is wearing his Hawks sweater.
Well, second I paid attention.
And then he took it off because the game ended and the scoring stopped. But that's going to happen when the game's over, I guess, right?
Right.
Yeah. All right.
I have a new playoff bra, and the one that I've worn each time they've won.
Yeah.
And I have little Blackhawks mojos. Mm-hmm. There's a Corey Crawford helmet that is poised and pointed towards the television.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little sock monkey, and there's a little bear. They all have Blackhawks logos on them, and they have won the game.
So it's obvious that the reason the Blackhawks have turned things around and are now knotted up at three games apiece with St. Louis, Dave, is that both Wendy and Kevin have these things going on.
What
and
have you done for us?
Who, me?
Yeah. You've kept Dave in it afterwards?
Yeah. I figured out that Dave needs to be here to do Hawkopedia. That's what I've done.
Focus and attention to detail. Let's go.
Yep.
Focus and attention to detail.
That's true. Very, very true. Dave, please, if you wouldn't mind, give us a Hawkopedia. We need it now more than ever.
720 WGN.
Uh-huh.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Hawk
Chicago
Opedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
So the topic today is guess what?
Game 7.
Game 7, you betcha. Nothing like it in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Nothing like it in sports.
Nothing really like a Stanley Cup playoff Game 7.
Really?
Game 7 of a World Series is something. Game 7 in an NBA playoff series. But Game 7 in the Stanley Cup playoffs, there.
Because every shot counts.
Yes.
Every shot
you just
could
never
determine
know.
Your season.
You never know. You could lose on a fluky goal like the Blackhawks did 2 years ago in Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals.
For?
Fluky goal played for Vancouver.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. No, actually, Los Angeles.
Oh, he did at
case.
The time.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, he did.
This will be the 14th Game 7 in Blackhawks history. It's their fifth since 2011. That year, they lost in overtime in Vancouver after they had rallied from a 3-0 deficit to tie the series. 2013, they beat Detroit in overtime at the United Center to win a series in which they had trailed 3-1 for the first time in franchise history. They had a chance to do that again a year later, but lost that fluky goal to L.A. in overtime at the United Center in the Western Conference Finals.
What a set. Remember, we all just sat stunned. Going, yes. That's not how you end it.
People, it was the quietest I've ever heard people leave the United Center. That everybody was sure they were going to win that night.
Right.
And they walked out of there, just people weren't saying a word.
I know.
Last year, again, in the conference final, but this time on the road, they won in Anaheim. St. Louis is playing its 15th Game 7, Blues 6-8 all time. They haven't played one since 2003. They haven't won one since 1999 when their coach was Joel Quenneville. Blackhawks players have been part of 62 Game 7s. The Blues, just 14. Six of those belong to Troy Brouwer, whose first Game 7 came as a member of the Blackhawks in Vancouver in 2011. This will be the 162nd Game 7 in Stanley Cup playoff history. One out of every four has been decided in overtime. So prepare to stay up late tonight.
It's going to be so exciting. There's a stat that you gave out earlier, Dave, about the Blackhawks in elimination games. I want to say, are they 13-4? Does that sound right?
Well, actually, it's a little better than that. Under Joel Quenneville, they're 13-4, but I'm pretty sure that they lost their first two. There was a game, they were eliminated by Detroit in 2009, mm-hmm. and then they were eliminated in that game in Vancouver in 2011. So they're really even a little better than that. And they've had an unbelievable record, 45-15 in games 4-7
that
of playoff series. It's really remarkable. They've only lost one time in an elimination game at home, and that was that game against the Kings. So for whatever they do, whatever they reach back and find, somehow in these games when they are facing elimination, they come up with it. It's really remarkable.
We have a lot of things in our favor. Definitely the confidence of the Blackhawks back in action. After the first period, as I tweeted the whole game live, I couldn't help myself. It was so quiet in the UC, and it was bugging me. It's like, we can't be disappointed. We have to cheer them on. And then they turned it around, and I think they're going into Game 7 tonight with confidence. St. Louis, a little vulnerable. You know?
I think so. Well, it has to have affected their confidence going
absolutely.
In.
Absolutely.
That doesn't mean if they get off to a good start, they can certainly get things turned around in a hurry. I mean, St. Louis gets the crowd behind them. And maybe it's not as bleak for them as people might think.
But there's three levels, Dave. There's level one. This is psychology talking. All right, level one is that they had a 3-1 lead.
They could have already handled
it. They could have handled it. They did not. Thing number two is they led by 2 goals last game, and they blew that lead. Thing number three is they know that the rumors are true that the coach's career, or career with the St. Louis Blues anyway, is on the line. Very likely, if they fall, Coach Hitchcock will be a thing of the past for St. Louis.
That may be, but I'm not sure that players are that focused on that at the moment.
No. I think Hitchcock's focused
on
it.
I know he
is.
He might be.
Right.
But I don't, you know, honestly, I just don't think players look at that the way maybe the rest of us do.
Yeah.
Here's one thing to keep in mind, that in a Game 7 all time, in those 161 Game 7s,
mm-hmm.
the team that scores first has won 74% of the time.
Oh, boy, is that big.
But then again, the Hawks have bucked trends all the way through the playoffs here.
I mean, they're a great road team where they weren't before. They were better at home. Now, who cares where they play?
And Buck Trenz, by the way, was a line mate of Fluky goals
really?
With the Los Angeles Kings.
Yes, that's
Buck
right.
Trenz.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
He's such a great player.
But I don't know. Someone would have to do the stats, find the stats on this. I don't know. There's another team in the NHL that has come back from down 3-1. This is the third time they've done it to force a Game 7.
Yep.
Now, granted, they've only won one of the first two. This is the fourth time now that they've been down 3-1. Well, they were down 3-1. They were down 3-0 against Vancouver in 2011.
Yeah.
But to come back down 3-1 and get it to Game 7, I'm not sure there's another team that's even done that, let alone win a couple, which they have a chance to do tonight.
Let's not get cocky. Let's be positive. We got to have focus and attention to detail, as Coach Q says.
All right, focus and attention to detail. Let's go.
He's right.
Thank you.
It's weird that he stayed on the line. He keeps saying that, isn't it? He's a busy man.
He'll do anything.
I'm shocked, but good for him.
Yep.
It should be exciting tonight.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
There's no anxiety like game seven anxiety.
Right.
We got to keep our mojos working because Kevin thinks he's done it. I have my little guys and everybody thinks they have a tradition. How are you going to help the Hawks win? We'll discuss it next. 312-981-7200. Thank you, Dave Ennett. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN.
What a nice man Dave Ennett is. Stuck around just for reasons that we all know aren't true. We know that what you're wearing, what Kevin's wearing, Dave doing the Hawkopedia, we know that that won't really have an outcome on the
Scientifically
game.
Scientifically proven, Bill.
Kevin, you're really cute.
You mean to tell me walking in the door and then scoring 2 seconds later is just a coincidence? Nope.
All right. I do. I don't want to upset anybody, but I do. Did you notice this? Andrew Shaw came back, of course, for the last game for Game 6. Got a bit of applause from the crowd. Did well, scored a goal. I was thinking to myself, Andrew Shaw is going to be on his best behavior after what happened. You're going to see a very, very polite Andrew Shaw. Maybe put his jacket down for somebody on the ice so they don't slip and fall. Did you notice, I hate to be the one who brings this up, they showed him on the bench fairly early on, and you could see that he was swearing. He wasn't using any kind of derogatory terms, but he was still swearing. And I even said to my family, I go, I think that's just part of the game.
That is his best behavior.
I might have taken a day off from swearing.
Not everybody gets so upset about swearing, Bill, like you do.
No, I'm not upset by it. I'm not. But I just, if the roles were reversed and it was me, just to be extra special careful after it costing him a game, I would have said, I'm only going to use G-rated language for a game or two.
Oh, poopy pants. Yes,
exactly. I would have said that.
I will notice that he was well-behaved because there were several pretty big hits that he could have really turned around and done something, and he bit the bullet and then went to the bench and swore.
Right.
So I'd rather have that happen.
Right.
And Andrew Ladd's doing great. I mean, what a great pickup. He's back with the Hawks. It was the night of the Andrews.
Yes.
Everyone, the Andrews brothers.
All the Andrews did well. I feel guilty about this. The Hawks are down 3-1 and we're watching the game. And I say to myself, because I have Doc Emmerich's phone number, and I say, I'm just going to text Doc Emmerich to something that he can read later on.
He's busy.
I know that. But in my head, I'm like, I'll text him this. And here's what I texted him. I just went, can we please start this game over? Please. In all caps. And I go, he'll read that later and he'll have a chuckle. Within seconds, I understand. Hi, Bill. Bunch of exclamation points. During the game. That was during the game.
That's why you shouldn't text him, because he can't wait till later.
But I turn the phone off during the... I mean, you and I do this puppet show 5 days a week. I turn my phone off during our puppet show. He's doing a nationally broadcast playoff game, Stanley Cup playoff game. He texts me back within seconds. He's calling the play.
He's polite. He doesn't want to leave you hanging.
I guess not.
He would never leave you hanging.
I'm very impressed by that.
He's a great man.
Yeah.
And he sounded good, and I can't contain myself for tonight.
There's so much at stake, and I mean, they fought their way back from down 3-1, and they scored 5 unanswered goals, and they look like the Blackhawks that we wanted to see in the playoffs. Those first few games, they were a little bit tentative as they learn. You know, they, and we've seen this before, as they're learning the moves of the team. But boy, toward the from the second and third period of the last game, you just go
dominance.
Yeah,
it was dominance.
Yep.
I can't wash the jersey. The Duncan Keith one.
So as
I
to
don't,
not wash the luck out of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I can't. I you know, we may have another series after this, which we're all hoping.
Yeah. Three more series would be okay.
I'll go for that.
Yeah.
Just whatever you think your mojo is, whether Bill disputes it, just keep doing it tonight.
Deep down, though, you know.
Yeah, but just quit taking the fun out of our lives.
I've asked this all along. Why do people who are fairly intelligent, and fairly is in italics, why do we believe that this matters? And everybody does. Everybody I talk to, I wore my lucky vest. You have a lucky vest?
Who has a vest?
I travel in dangerous circles.
I think just
it's my Eric Nestorenko vest. I wear it every playoff game.
We know it's not us, but just let us believe.
I know.
You know, we're at home watching from our couches, ordering pizzas and hoping they get there. So
yes.
in between periods so you don't have to pause the game to go answer the door.
Right.
Just let us feel like we're doing something.
Oh, I'm so much... I'm at home. I'm in Evanston yelling, you know, the Hawks are playing at the United Center, and I'm going, host is open! I'm screaming that to the TV because the player with the puck is going, oh, he is? Thanks, Bill. I didn't realize host was open. I'll pass to him now.
Host is back. I mean, it would be nice what Steve Cochran said, overtime, and Taser scores the winning goal.
I'll take that win.
He's put them up. They haven't gone in. We got to do it.
Right. All right, a big show, all kinds of things. Thrilled that you're here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we lost Prince last week, and I watched SNL did a little tribute to Prince over the weekend, and they had several of his performances.
Including that first one when he was, I think, 22 years old, but you could already see at 22.
Oh, with the thigh highs on?
Yes.
I loved it.
You could see that even though he was only 22, he had this this air about him. He seemed like somebody who'd been doing this forever. He was 22 years old on network television and just killing it. And it's funny because the comparisons, everybody, when they talk about Prince, had mentioned his influences were the obvious. Were Little Richard, you saw that. You've heard all the obvious ones. But I saw mostly Mick Jagger in that very first performance, didn't you?
I don't know who I saw. And I mean, he could rock, but he also was very into funk.
Right. Chuck Berry, obviously, is there. There's some Rick James there. I mean, there's a lot of obvious ones, but that first performance especially, it looked so much to me like a Mick Jagger-influenced performance.
Yeah, but better dressing. I'm telling you, you know, the long jacket with the huge lapels.
Yeah.
And then as he spins around, because I can't believe how well he danced in those 4-inch heels while playing a guitar without missing a note.
Mm-hmm.
And when he spun around, you could see that they were like thigh-high tights.
Right.
Man, I love him.
You can't get that off the rack, Wendy. You got a special order that. I've been to Robert Hall Village. I know what's in stock and what's not in stock.
Well, he was just beautiful. As I was looking at him through all the hairstyles, too.
Yeah.
Sometimes long hair, sometimes an afro. SNL did a decent job with it, but then they put all his performances, the first part of it, and then I forgot how great Fred Armisen was as Prince,
mm-hmm.
and Maya Rudolph as Beyoncé.
Mm-hmm.
And they put all those then in a row afterwards, and they should have interspersed them.
Yeah.
Like, have a musical performance, then the Prince show.
Right.
It was okay. And then, Jimmy Fallon was hosting it, and I was definitely looking forward to the end where there was at the 40th anniversary, where they had this after-hour party going at 4:30 in the morning, and everybody's up on stage jamming, doing things, and I guess Dave Chappelle came up to Jimmy Fallon and said, you know, Prince is here. Try and coax him up to the stage.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Fallon just kind of said, hey, Prince, we know you're out there. I dare you to come up on stage. He comes up and sings a slowed-down version of Let's Go Crazy, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But this was video... like shot from somebody's iPhone.
Yeah, I don't think it was ever intended for network broadcast. It was interesting to see.
It probably shouldn't have been, though. And then Jimmy Fallon's acting like, you know, oh, me and Chris Rock were up on stage singing background. No, Jimmy Fallon was just flopping around and acting. At one point, he's trying to get Prince's attention, and Prince just walks right past him.
Right.
It was kind of a letdown watching that whole thing, and then this is it? It was cool seeing Prince do that.
But it was nice knowing that in a room full of television's best, Saturday Night Live's best anyway, you know, all the comedians that were in the room and all the artists that were in the room, he seemed to have garnered the most attention. He was the one who everybody was like, Prince is performing! That was impressive to me.
And that was cool. And he was cool. He let those chicks in his band that he had performed one of the performances on SNL.
Yeah.
There was a woman drummer and guitarist and bass player.
Yeah.
And he let her have this awesome guitar solo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was not selfish at all. But a texter has just texted us at 847, enough with Prince. It's really weird. it's like Elvis died again.
I'm shocked at, not that he's getting attention, but he
has. Well deserved.
Right. Very well deserved. But if you look in our lifetime, the performances that kind of transcended just being performers, but were just at their own level, you know, and Elvis
David
Presley.
David Bowie did not get this attention.
I don't think David Bowie did get this much attention.
And in a way, I think that's what's bothering me.
Well, let's say,
I'm a Bowie huge, you know, Bowie fan.
Yeah.
Prince never quite registered with me, but I was recognized as influence.
Yeah.
I think Prince probably had a bigger influence than David Bowie did.
Overall.
Yeah.
Not
individual songs and things, but in general, the impression that he made on the industry and the country, Prince probably was greater than Bowie's.
But wouldn't you agree that this is rivaling Elvis Presley's,
yeah,
Michael Jackson.
Sure.
John Lennon is a tough one to call because the media wasn't the way it was.
Yeah.
Or you could say that about Elvis too. But it wasn't as immediate as it is now.
And Bowie was in his 70s, you know, so
yeah. Yeah.
That was different.
Yeah.
I guess. I feel like, and Prince did influence, there were so many genres. When you watch that SNL stuff, I really remembered. And even watching the Super Bowl performance, I watched that over the weekend too. It's amazing. He is blues, he's funk, he's rock and roll,
yeah,
he's country. I mean, seriously, every
right
genre comes together with the Prince's music.
But it wasn't like with the ones I just mentioned, with Elvis Presley, with Michael Jackson, with John Lennon. Your average music fan could easily name 10, 15, or 20 hits. And with Prince, I think your average music fan would have a very hard time pulling out 10 or 15 or 20 song titles, don't you?
Probably.
I couldn't. I couldn't name 15 Prince songs.
I could probably. I gotta do it during the break now. Prince was definitely a musical talent, and he deserves celebration, but I was surprised that there's still stuff going on.
Oh, yeah. Lots and lots and lots.
And I was, you know, and then I'm just feeding fuel to the fire because over the weekend I wanted to know about his parents. Were they alive? And his father, this is a weird thing too, okay? There was his dad, John L. Nelson, was, and his mother, Maddie Shaw, they were both jazz musicians. And
wouldn't you expect, I didn't know that, but I'm not shocked by it at all.
No.
You just go, well, that music has to come from somewhere.
And here's what's weird to me. These were both jazz musicians, John L. Nelson and Maddie Shaw, Prince's parents. They played in Nelson's band called Prince Rogers.
Yeah.
That was the name of the band. Well, Prince's name is Prince Rogers Nelson.
Yeah.
Named after that band.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool to me.
Yeah.
Can I tell you another thing? You know, we've got a group of listeners in Paris right now with John Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And he's writing on his Facebook page. They got there in the Eiffel Tower. Was bathed in purple.
Really?
When they
How
arrived.
Cool is
yeah.
that?
Oh, that's surprising. So it's worldwide. It's not just here in the United States.
It's weird. And he has a sister who is surviving him. And his parents are both gone. He has some half-sisters and brothers.
Yeah.
So she is also a musician. I think it's Tyka Nelson. And it looks like she's going to be the heir.
Oh.
To the Prince throne.
Oh. Meaning she absorbs everything he owns? Is that what you mean? Yeah. That's a lot of stuff.
Yep.
That's a bunch of stuff.
Well, I just was, you know, surprised at this is still going
on.
Oh,
even today. Lots of attention. And you knew it would get
with reason,
a bunch,
I get it.
But not as much as he's gotten. So, all right. We have a lot more for you. So stay where you are. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Wendy, what seemed like a good idea in Texas, in a town near Austin, Texas, could backfire. There's a grade school out there, an elementary school, that is currently called Robert E. Lee School. That's what they're called now. They want to change the name of it, so they've left it up to the community members to choose a new name. They're going to vote for a new name. So community members in this Austin neighborhood have voted on a unique list of potential names after many people said that the name of the late Confederate general was offensive to them. There are people who hear Robert E. Lee, and they think about the Civil War, so that they're upset that a school could be named that, and has been for years. Some of the new names suggested for the Robert E. Lee Elementary School include Donald J. Trump Elementary School.
Oh, my gosh. Who sent that in? Donald Trump?
Donald Trump's people sent that in. Harper Lee Elementary School. That's for the author who died a couple months ago.
To Kill a Mockingbird?
The Spike Lee Elementary School. Even the Bruce Lee Elementary School have all been considered. Here's one that I find fairly offensive. Tell me if you do, too. The Adolf Hitler School for Friendship and Tolerance.
That's got to be a joke. That's one.
Well, whoever put it in there is saying, let's turn a negative into a positive, but I don't know that everyone will read it that way. I know I wouldn't if I was in the town. According to voting results, Donald Trump's name has the most support so far. 45 ballots have been cast, hoping that it'll be the Donald J. Trump Elementary School. Harper Lee is in second place, having 30 votes. The Adolf Hitler School for Friendship and Tolerance currently has 8 votes.
Okay, that scares me even more, that there's any votes.
I know. 0 would be the number that would be ideal for him, but no, 8 people have said, no, we understand that his name has a negative connotation, but by throwing in the Friendship and Tolerance, we're nullifying that. I don't see it that way. Still, at least 34 people have voted to keep the school's original name. That's the Robert E. Lee School. And then they give a full list of all the names. The school district will present the top 3 vote getters to the Board of Trustees on May the 23rd, and a review will take place then. But as of now, if the election were held today, you would have that school being called the Donald J. Trump Elementary School.
Where did they get their research? Was it done on the internet?
For which name to choose?
Yes.
It doesn't say.
Because the last time you let the internet decide on something, we got Bodie McBoatface. You know about this, too?
A little bit, yeah.
See, I've just heard Kevin...
This was in England, right?
Right. Yeah. Hello.
Yes.
I would hear Kevin say Bodie McBoatface a lot of times when in between shows we would look for a promo, what should we do? And sometimes you would just whip out a Bodie McBoatface.
You know, when I have nothing else to say, that's
his go-to. That
I thought
sense.
He was just being cute. I didn't really know what was going on. A British government agency let the internet suggest a name for this almost $300 million polar research ship.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the great names that were coming up, Endeavour, Falcon. But all of a sudden, you know, Bodie McBoatface surfaced as the top one.
That's your winner. But then didn't they decide they're not, even though that they had announced that it was by vote and whoever had the most votes would be the winner, and that's the one that won, but then they said, nah, we can't do that.
Well, as of April 17th, which is just a few days ago, as the polls closed for the naming of its new polar research ship,
mm-hmm.
They confirmed that the votes were overwhelmingly in favor of RRS Bodie McBoatface, and I don't know if they've decided that they're going to do it.
I thought I heard that they turned it down, that even though that was the winner, that they just went, no, this isn't legitimate sounding. We can't possibly do this.
I hope they don't.
What this tells us, though, is around the globe now, anytime we're given a chance to vote for something, in the old days, you wanted to vote for the one that made the most sense, but now... society has decided, let's vote for the most ridiculous and see what happens.
Yeah, but look what happens when you go ridiculous.
I know.
Like the Adolf Hitler School of Friendship
and Tolerance. Yeah. Friendship and Tolerance. But that's what's going to happen in the presidential election, too. That's what keeps happening. Is in the old days, we went, well, we got to take something seriously. Let's make an election that moment to be serious. But not anymore.
Why aren't you liking this type of thing? Because you are quite
usually,
the prankster.
I know. Usually I do. But when there's huge things at stake, like a presidential election, I get a little leery. When it's something funny like naming, you know, something in England, I don't care. But when it's the president, I'm like, oh, what's happened to us?
Why don't we all do, here's a thing, start a Facebook page. Let's all do a proper thing to have Bodie McBoatface run for president.
That'd be a better vote.
Would you vote for the RRS Bodie McBoatface?
For president?
Instead of Donald Trump?
Yes. I know that sounds awful, but yes. I like when you saw that one of the Koch brothers, and you can't get more extreme than the Koch brothers are, and one of those guys said, I think Hillary Clinton is a better option than who the Republicans are offering.
There was Charles Koch, and he said she might be.
Right, right. Yeah, he said, left a window.
Can you imagine a Clinton being better than the Republicans? Because I could see that.
And that's the most extreme right-wing guy probably in the country. And he said that.
Well, he left a window and he might be jumping out of it.
I know. All right, we need to take a break. Steve has the news, and then Draft Town is coming to Chicago. Everything you need to know about Draft Town will be told next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Who's ready for some football? It's coming to town. It's NFL Draft Town. Now, I remember it happened last year in this very city.
Yeah.
And we looked over at Pioneer Court and saw those giant football helmets that were really cool.
We tried them on. We got yelled at by security. Said those aren't for you and everything.
Mine was a little big. Wait, I don't know about yours.
Mine fit perfectly.
They're giant.
Yeah, mine fit well.
In the studio with us right now is Chicago Sports Commission Executive Director Kara Bachman. Hi, Kara. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
We loved those big helmets. Where are they? They're not here.
I know. They were very popular and so popular that the NFL wanted to incorporate them into the center of it all. So those 32 team helmets are all down in Draft Town in Grant Park.
Oh, they are. Okay. Why can't Draft Town be all year round? Why can it? I would like Draft Town to start and end with the calendar year. Why can't that be?
I love that idea.
Wouldn't that be nice?
I think, yeah. I mean, let's
do that.
Why not?
Somebody has to. It should be our city.
Yes, of course.
You did this last year and it was a huge hit. So now we have this the second year in a row. What are the differences between this year's Draft Town and last year's Draft Town?
Yeah, having last year under the belt, we analyzed that and said, how can we make it bigger and better? Mm. What can we do? You know, what were some of the real highlights and how do we highlight those even more and give more of that to fans?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the main differences that I think is cool is the redesign. So it's in the same space, slightly bigger. It's about 20 football fields for a size comparison.
Wow.
And Selection Square, which was really popular, kind of the outdoor theater that you saw last year, the back of it was against Michigan Avenue. That is, it's kind of flipped. So that is now on the east side of Buckingham Fountain. So better sight lines, you know, fans were all crowded in front of Selection Square last year. Now we're opening that space up, driving people to Buckingham Fountain, giving everybody a great, you know, feel of Chicago.
What a great view.
Beautiful.
Seriously.
Shouldn't Buckingham Fountain run the colors of whatever team is making that selection? Wouldn't that be a nice tie-in?
Well, yes. I mean, I think we could dye the water, I guess, but we lit it last year with the colors and are going to do that again this year. So,
did they do it in the colors of the teams last year?
Yeah,
they did.
Yeah.
I thought I was messing around, but they're really doing that.
That was not Photoshop. That was for real.
Oh, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Good.
All right. Now, Draft Town's happening in Grant Park. It's Grant Park and Congress Plaza east of Michigan Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And it kicks off this coming Thursday, correct?
That's right. And that's another thing that's new with this year is the time. There was great demand last year. We had a lot of people going through the park, so extended the hours. So Thursday and Friday is noon to 10 p.m. And then on Saturday, it's 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
I'm sure this is a silly question for some, but other people will want to know this. Is there an admission price or you just show up? Is there any kind of charge involved?
No, it is free. It's free for everybody, all ages. You know, of course, there's you can go to NFL.com/drafttown. Make sure you check out the FAQs. You know, of course, we're keeping everyone who's attending safe and, you know, magnetometers at the entrance. Just make sure everybody going through isn't is going to be safe. So just check out so you don't, you know, bring something that sets those off.
All right.
And so this is a family fun event,
yes,
correct?
Yes.
I did not go last year.
What?
I don't even know what to expect.
Come on. You're coming this year, aren't you?
I would like to come.
Yes.
But what will I see? What will I find? Are there clinics? Are there cheerleaders?
Yes, there's all of that. So across the 3 days, there will be clinics in particular at Grove 5 in Grant Park. And so NFL Play 60 and NFL Flag. There are a ton of public clinics, so it's first come, first serve, but lots of opportunities for kids to learn from coaches, from prospects, test your skills with the 40-yard dash and the vertical jump, see if maybe one day you'll make it to the NFL, you know?
Oh, I think it's too late for me.
Don't say that. It's never too late.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons. And then, yeah, you mentioned that there's cheerleaders. There's going to be autograph sessions. There's going to be chalk talks. You know, Von Miller is going to be doing a chalk talk. talk, Richard Dent, Mike Ditka.
Otis Wilson I saw
up
here.
Yeah, and there'll be more to come. I'm sure that they're having about, let's see, I think now we're up to over 65 legends who will be in town and have a role in Draft Town, whether it's with the red carpet.
Yeah.
Prospects walk the red carpet on Thursday. Legends will be part of the red carpet on Friday. And then on Saturday, fans actually get an opportunity to get on the red carpet and act, you know, like they're about to walk in and get drafted. So,
oh, that's cool.
There's also, when you talk of families, obviously tons of food and beverage. And then this year, a new addition also is an NFL-themed Ferris wheel. So, you know, Navy Pier is under construction.
Good planning.
Yeah, we've
what
got
that. What does that mean, an NFL-themed Ferris wheel? Each car is a different team? Yeah. Is that what that is?
Yeah. Bingo.
Wow.
Yes.
That's excellent.
Only get in the Bears car.
What do you think of the Bears are going to do this year? Are you excited about it? It's we're reeling from a bad year, and we're hoping they're going to turn it around.
Yeah.
no comments from Kara Bachman.
You have to be very diplomatic here, Kara. Good luck.
Well, it's all we have, though. I mean, we're fans.
Yeah. I think it's going to be great. We have a lot of opportunity. There's a ton of, you know, guys coming in excited to obviously, you know, get their chance to play in the NFL. I mean, I think a lot of people are leaning towards we're going to make some, you know, picks, high picks with defense and players. I think that's a good strategy. We'll only know come Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. But I think we have 9 picks maybe at this point. So.
But they're notorious for wasting their draft picks. Last year they drafted a puppy in the first round and salami in the second round. That's
Stop
not going to win
it.
You the Super Bowl.
We have a new coach.
All right.
Lose your bitterness, Lef,
right.
Will you?
I just want to see him win.
NFL Museum. Is there a museum that's going to be there at Draft
Vince
Town?
Vince Lombardi Trophy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's
all
impressive.
50 Super Bowl rings and a lot of other what they have at NFL Experience during Super Bowl, which actually is a ticketed event, you know, at Super Bowl. And now we get to offer it to Chicagoans and visitors for free. So I'm excited about that. I like
That's
that.
That's excellent.
There's NFL Virtual Reality.
Yep.
What is that?
That
what
I think that's
there?
I think there's a couple of different things with the virtual reality, but I saw it at Super Bowl and, you know, whether it's on the field plays.
Like
and
you're playing.
Yeah, through Verizon has this technology.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's very
there's
nice.
The Wilson Football Factory. See how official NFL game balls are individually produced.
Yep.
And Bill, this is something for you. Hall of Famous. Get your own bronze bust digitized at the Pro Football Hall of Fame exhibit.
Oh, that's fun.
You can be Bill Lef, Heisman Trophy winner.
I went to the Tom Brady tire deflator last year where you drive your car up and they deflate the tires. I thought that was fun. I love that.
I mean, it's not too late. We could add a few more elements here. But, I mean, yeah, there's... I don't know if they have that one this year.
No, this year it's been canceled. You know what, though? Several friends of mine went, and they said just from walking around, they ran into so many, you know, football greats from the past and guys that were up and coming, and that's just a good time to walk around and see somebody you didn't expect to see from the game. That's fun.
Yeah, and there's so two network stages again, NFL Network and ESPN will be on the fountain table, and there's some kind of ancillary stages where the autographs and chalk talks and things like that will be happening. But from the media, from some of the top, you know, football analysts, they'll be on site there. Last year, that was so popular. People were just crowded around NFL Network's their stage, and same with ESPN, and you're, you know, watching Chris Berman and Rich Eisen, and you got all these guys, you know, right there in front of you, you know, almost an arm's length away. And
the excitement of, you know, each team making that pick, it's electric in there. Mm-hmm. So that's excellent. That's great.
So here's the dumbest question you're ever going to get, Kara Bachman, Chicago Sports Commission Executive Director. So when does the draft happen? How does it go through that whole Thursday, Friday, Saturday?
Yeah, so the round one starts Thursday, and that is taking place in Auditorium Theater, but it's still connected with Selection Square. So the activities, you know, the commissioner will kick off you're on the clock to the Rams.
That's pretty exciting. If you're really into your team, that's pretty exciting to act like you're a part of it, sort of.
Well, 100%. This is a fan event, and, you know, it's great that we love the Bears, but welcome all of you know, their friends from across the league.
Were you surprised last year, though, because I just assumed it's in Chicago, there's going to be mostly Bears fans and a trickling of fans from other teams, but there were fans from every team. I mean, everybody was well represented last year.
Yeah, and you could see it, right? When just walking around, and everyone wears their jersey, and everybody is out there celebrating and getting excited about, yeah, what does this mean for next season? I can't say we were surprised. I mean, that's what we were hoping for.
Right.
You know, from the onset of this, we always talk to the NFL about there are direct flights from every single NFL market to Chicago. You know, we are
and Green Bay has an airport. Do they have an airport in Green Bay?
It's made out of cheese.
Yeah, I don't know. They might opt to drive, but you know, whether it's to driving or flights, we could really welcome all fans from the NFL, and it's great. I mean, it's fun. It was fun rivalry. You know, people are all excited about, hey, what's going to happen with my team next year based on who we're adding to the roster. So it was just great energy, good vibes, family oriented, fun. And we're hoping for that again this year.
Well, I think you're going to get it. As you heard Bill and I mention, we had friends that went and really had a great time.
Bill,
so
I'm happy to hear that.
I just want to throw this in really quickly, too. Plenty of places to buy jerseys, hats, any paraphernalia with your team's logo. That's everywhere, right?
And in particular, we actually have a pop-up store that's on Michigan Avenue. And it is, Michigan and Van Buren, maybe?
But you'll be able to see it and get to it quickly from Drafttown.
Yes, and there's the NFL shop inside Drafttown. But so if, you know, you want to get your gear prior to entering, you can do that at the NFL pop-up store also. And they have every team.
Yeah.
Really cool stuff from every team in the league.
Good.
Because people are coming from all around the country to come to the second annual NFL Drafttown, and it's happening starting Thursday, 12 p.m. Noon it opens.
That's right.
So people are going to be leaving work on Thursday and going to Drafttown.
I sure hope so. And then the first pick is made at 7 p.m. to answer your question before. So it will be linked, you know, Selection Square, the outdoor portion of the theater in combination with Roosevelt's inside. But the first pick, Rams go on the clock at 7.
I think do the Bears have the 10th pick overall? Does that sound
11.
Right? 11th pick, yeah. All right.
She's Kara Bachman, and she's Chicago Sports Commission Executive Director. Good luck. Continued success with this NFL Drafttown.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And to find out the whole schedule, you can go to choosechicago.com/2016 NFL Draft, and there's a whole schedule of who's going to be there.
Yeah.
I wonder if Bodie McBoatface will be there.
Yeah, absolutely.
you guys will be there, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
One of those days, I'm going to go out there. Weather's
supposed
to
be good.
We
hope to get drafted this year. We were very disappointed last year, Kara, that neither of us got drafted.
Yeah, I've heard some scouts throwing their names around.
Yeah.
Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Why don't the Bears just, you know, just say,
curl up in a fetal position and take a nap?
We've tried it in the past. We haven't had success. Wendy, you pick this year. We've tried picking. It hasn't done well for us. You pick this year. Wouldn't that be nice?
Can I just tell you that I spend my whole life and every hour of every day trying not to get on your bad side?
Mm.
Don't you forgive? I know you like the Dolphins. The Dolphins were a great team, in the 70s?
Yeah.
Okay, it's 2016.
Right.
We live in Chicago.
Right. Right.
Don't you feel like a curmudgeon?
No. I feel like somebody at the Bears needs to wise up and figure out how to win. They don't have anybody doing that right now. It's as frustrating can be. They make lousy picks every year. They make terrible trades. They get rid of players that are good. They keep players that are bad. Cutler, I'm looking at you. Somebody needs to figure that team out because they're not doing it.
And you think you could give them some tips?
No, not me. But get some. There are football minds that do this for a living. Look at other cities. They're just a pathetic football team. They're hideous to watch. They need to turn that around.
Kevin, he's got hate in him.
Always.
It doesn't frustrate you sitting there week after week after week watching a team that just doesn't know how to win?
What am I supposed to do? Become a Packer fan? That cannot happen.
Oh, come on. Join my side.
No.
Boo.
Kim, I'm giving them one more year, and then I'm on Kim's team.
Come on. I've got a cheese
one
head
more
just
year.
Waiting for you.
I'll take it.
Bill, you make that move, you're never welcome back.
I'll take it. That's all right. It's
when Kevin
so much,
and I are driving the bandwagon, we will run over you.
Is it or isn't it more fun to win than lose?
Duh, Bill.
Well, why would anybody sit there for 16 weeks and watch the same team lose over and over and over again? At some point, you just got to go, this team doesn't want to win.
Any given Sunday, Bill.
I think they want to win.
How to win. That's worse. They have
Bill,
no idea how to win.
All teams go through slumps.
It's true.
But this slump
has been
going on.
This has been a long one, but...
My
well, look at
with
the Cubs.
One year.
The Cubs have been in a slump, too. Why do you,
right, 100 years.
Why
Bill.
Do you keep watching
years.
Those games?
Well, now they're winning
now?
Like crazy.
Okay.
I know, but I and live that... now. I don't live in the past or the future. I live currently. Who was the one who said after 1 week last year, don't waste your time on this team?
I don't care
it
about the
me.
Bears. I never really even cared about the Bears because I don't watch football. But you are a Chicago born and bred football lover.
That's why it frustrates me. If I was from somewhere else, I'd go, well, I live somewhere else. I've got something else to do. But on a Sunday, when you want to watch a team, a professional football team, not a peewee team like the Bears have become, that's frustrating. You listen to our friends. Do you or do you not love Ed Obradovich?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. He gets more nuts than I do.
But he still watches.
He watches because that's his. It's his legacy. He was a member of the Bears.
My husband makes me watch. And Kevin, you said you're proud of Jim for making me watch because
yeah.
every Sunday it's like make some chili
that's
or
like
appetizer.
That's like the Marquis de Sade. Let's get punished for 3 hours on a Sunday afternoon.
You've watched Cubs games for years when they haven't won. They've turned it around. Who's to say that the Bears aren't going to turn it around this year?
I want them to turn it around.
Well, then don't then let rid of that negative energy.
I'm hoping they turn it around.
You're putting the negative energy, the negative juju out into the atmosphere, into the universe. It's going to come back and bite us all in the ass.
They're the most brutal team in professional sports to watch.
That's not true.
They are.
No, it's not
because
true.
Because the potential is there. They've got the potential. They just don't know what to do with
we
it.
We could be the Browns.
I'm serious. One more year with the Bears, I'll go to the Browns, I'll go to the Packers.
Then you have to move.
I'm not moving.
We can get an ISDN line.
I'm not moving.
Someone says you're a hypocrite because you were watching the Cubs games for 100 years, even though they haven't won anything.
Right. I'll accept that. I'll take that.
Somebody thinks you should go to Hallis Hall and spew your rhetoric.
If I knew how to
if they listen to
if,
you
if I knew how to get them to listen to me spew my rhetoric at Hallis Hall, I would do just that.
It's called loyalty, Bill.
It is loyalty, but at some point it's just common sense. Jay Cutler is the most frustrating quarterback in the NFL, hands down.
What if he turns it around this year?
Then I will kiss him on Michigan Avenue. I'll give him a smooch right on Michigan Avenue. He's not going to turn anything around. He has no idea how to win. It's zero.
Well, it's not all up to him.
Well, it's not all up to him, but somebody needs to show him colors and go, okay, this is the color of the Bears jersey. Throw to guys wearing this color, not that color. That color's the other team. Don't throw to that team. Throw to this color.
He's not that bad.
He's the best Bears quarterback.
On paper. On the field, we need to change things up a little bit.
Statistically.
A lot of it.
Well, don't we have a new coach? Aren't we roaring to go? Isn't this the change
no,
of year?
No, they have the same coach they had last year.
They're going to be better
this
year.
Well, it was a building process last year.
Winning record this year. Playoff team,
Before that, they had Lovie Smith, who napped.
He was just too nice.
Took a Sunday nap at noon every Sunday.
You dropped the ball? That's okay. It's all about teamwork. If you drop the ball, we all drop the ball.
Ben Carson called him the most laid-back American. What does that
Good
tell
one.
You?
I don't know. I'm not talking Bears with you because that's all I got. That's all I got.
Doesn't that make you sad, though? Look at Kim, smart enough to realize there's a team not far away that knows how to win.
That's her loyalty.
Right.
Haven't you always been a Packer fan?
Always.
But look at how...
For 30 years, because I'm married to,
But those past 30 years, the Packers have
She's been lucky.
They've had Bart Starr. They've had three
Brett
amazing
Favre.
Quarterbacks. Brett Favre.
Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers. And I didn't even mention Mikowski. Not great. But
there's a history there.
I know.
Go to the pack.
Just know my invitation's always open.
I may take you up on it.
You
I'm that
not.
Close. I'm
Green
so
and yellow
close.
Look good on you.
I'm so close. All right, we'll take a quick break and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, joined by the feistiest columnist that ever was, Eric Zorn of the
You're
Chicago Tribune.
You're pretty feisty today.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm going to sue you if you're too feisty.
Trying to steal your feistiness?
I have a trademark on feistiness.
I don't want that. I don't want to go to court with you, Eric. How are you? Everything good?
Yeah, things are fine. It's what an interesting week of news again, as always.
What
it
happened?
Has been a lot. Everything's happened.
Everything's happened.
Tell us, Feistmaster General.
Well, the story that I wrote about yesterday, which has my attention, is the story about this Blaine Elementary School in Chicago on the north side. Troy LaRiviere, hard last name to say, was principal there, award-winning principal. He won multiple merit bonuses there.
Yeah.
Is a great speaker, talker, writer, but a harsh critic of Mayor Emanuel. He backed Chuy Garcia publicly. He was campaigning for Bernie Sanders. Last Wednesday, Chicago Public Schools, you know, reassigned him, quote unquote. They sent him home, and who knows what's going to happen to him. That's kind of, you know, they put you off in a space and then
does reassignment mean he's out of a job for a while, or they'll find him another school?
I think he's at home reassigned to his couch until further notice. And I'm not sure what kind of contract he's under. Or
what was the reason they gave for this?
Well, the reasons were very vague, and they never really said. They just said that he had. I can actually tell you exactly what they said.
All right.
Because it was so unsatisfying to so many people. But they said they cited alleged acts of misconduct, including violations of a previously board-issued warning resolution. And that had to do, I believe, with his encouragement of students and parents not to take some of the standardized tests, that he feels that students are tested too much in these schools.
Yeah.
They put too much emphasis and too much time onto these standardized tests. He's a very eloquent guy, a very powerful speaker, and the question that came to my mind, it's come to a lot of people's mind, is why at this time when Mayor Emanuel has so much on his plate? Now, he runs the Board of Education. They say, you know, the Board of Ed said, oh, we did this without consulting the mayor, and the mayor's office said, oh, we had nothing to do with this. But it is his Board of Education. It's one of the artifacts of the school reform from the 90s, which is the Chicago mayor owns the schools, for better or for worse. I mean, when they go well, he takes credit for it. When they don't go well, he gets the blame.
Is it like that in other major cities?
Not every major city. No, it all depends on how it's done and whether they have elected school boards, appointed school boards. Here, the school board is appointed. So in any case, you know, Mayor Emanuel, he's got this crime problem right now with 1,000 shooting victims that was announced last week already in the city. He's got the problem trying to push through this Lucas Museum plan.
Right.
And we've got, you know, these incredible other problems that are caused by the state budget crisis is going on. So why at this moment you would create this kind of a controversy? And the parents were out this morning at Blaine Elementary. It's up there by the Music Box Theater, if you know, where, you know,
off Southport,
just south of Irving Park Road.
Yeah.
They were out there protesting. They're going to be out there again protesting this afternoon, 5:30, I guess. And they've got the Stand With Troy hashtag T-shirts and Twitter campaign going. I don't know what's going to happen, but what's going on is that he is running. He was a candidate to run, and I'm going to get the name right, but it's the Principals Association here, the Chicago Principal and Administrative Association, Principals and Administrative Association. He was one of the two candidates to run that job. The head of it is outgoing.
Yeah.
And so the thought was, well, if they get rid of him, then he won't have this newfound prominence.
Mm-hmm.
But the head of that association said, well, nothing in our bylaws prohibits someone who is no longer a principal from being the head of this. And it seems quite possible that the principals will get behind him and elect him. I think it's next month that they're going to have their election to that position. So in a sense, what Mayor Emanuel's done is he's called, or what the CPS has done, without Mayor Emanuel's knowledge, is they have called attention to this guy. They've made him into a martyr, into a cause celeb. The parents are all riled up because apparently he does a very good job there. I don't know what the play is here. I don't know what the thinking is. He was outspoken. He was a thorn in the mayor's side as an activist principal, but he was getting results, and the parent community was behind him. I say you let the guy rant and rave, and you don't call too much attention to it. I mean, I'm thinking one of the analogies that comes to my mind is the Catholic Church and Father Flager. You know, Father Flager is a pain in the archdiocese's rear end, right? Yeah. I mean, he is. He's off script. He's off message quite a bit. And remember when they tried to reassign him?
When
was that? I mean, you know,
a couple of years ago.
And just it strengthened him. You know,
right.
It was like it made him more entrenched, because the tradition in the church is to move people from parish to parish.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Because it's about the church. It's not about the individuals, right? They don't want to have this cult of personality so much in the parishes. Anyway, I'm rambling on here, but that's the feeling I have, which is that when you do something like that to try to squash somebody by firing them, you thinking, well, this will get the the dissent under control, it has a tendency to backfire.
But explain this, because we went through this in Evanston at the church that my wife attends. There was a pastor there that was extremely popular and had been there for years, and everything was working on all cylinders. Attendance was good. People were happy. And they pulled him. They put him in another church, and it really hurt everybody there at the parish. The attendance is nowhere near what it was a couple of years ago. So what's in it for them in moving these guys around?
I don't know. It's a mystery, because when you have something like this, you realize that, what's the saying in politics? Keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Yeah.
And it seemed like this violates that number one tenet there, which is you don't turn somebody into a martyr. You don't turn someone into a hero. Who knew this guy's name? I mean, I even had a hard time pronouncing it.
Right.
Troy La Riviere. And I actually had a lot of conversations with my friends and neighbors on the northwest side of Chicago over the weekend. And half of them hadn't heard of him. They knew there was some principal, but now everybody knows the guy's name. Stand with Troy. He's got a hashtag. And I was thinking, this is just, they ought to just let him go back there, let him run the school. He's not right now. I actually think, you can mark this down. I think that he might be the person that they're looking for to run for mayor against Emanuel.
Is that right?
Well, it's 2019, right? Which is the next election. So it's so far off. But there are no rising Democrats. I mean, remember we talked about Karen Lewis,
the
head of the Chicago Teachers Union. And she is, compared to this, this guy is outspoken.
But Karen Lewis is
very polarizing. And also she has her reputation was built as a union head. And that's an automatically somewhat polarizing position. Mm-hmm. La Riviere's fame and so on is come as a result of his talents as a principal, as an educator. And we're all, we're all for the children. We're all for education. For someone who, if he was able to get some political momentum here, some funding, some platform, I can imagine him going to a think tank, one of these places where he can spend his entire days railing against how Emanuel's been running the schools. I mean, he was one of the first people, by the way, to come out against Barbara Bird Bennett in this soups contract, this principal consulting. I mean, he was calling baloney on that way before anybody else was. And of course, she turned out to be a crook, and so he looks prescient there. And, I can see someone like this being the kind of figure, because it's been very hard for opponents of incumbent Chicago mayors to get traction.
Yeah, right.
Chuy Garcia seemed like a nice enough guy, but boy, he was not very good as a candidate, and he wasn't very impressive. He didn't seem to have a comprehensive and solid platform.
But even that said, he actually ended up getting a lot of people, their interest and their vote, and that was the guy who, as you said, wasn't the best option.
Although more interest than vote, correct?
Yes, I think that's right. I think a lot of people voted for him thinking that, I don't know that he's going to be that great a mayor, but I've got to send a message to Mayor Emanuel.
It was a vote against Emanuel, not a vote for Garcia.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I think that with someone like Troy, he might be the kind of person who, given a couple of years to get a whole platform together, to build support, he could be the kind of guy. I mean, African-American man, which is an important asset for a candidate who's going to run against Mayor Emanuel. Yeah. And I think he would have citywide appeal. I'm just throwing it out there as a possibility. So that down. So
that's Eric Zorn. He's feisty. He works for the Chicago Tribune. We'll be back after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, along with our friend Eric Zorn, the feisty columnist for your Chicago Tribune. Eric, how about this? Ted Cruz and John Kasich are now teaming up against Donald Trump.
It's huge.
It's going to be. It is going to be.
Well, it's interesting. What they've decided to do is split up. You guys have talked about this already this morning.
Nope.
Off the air.
Okay, it's off the air. It's unbelievable. No, Cruz is taking Indiana. He said, I'm going to run in Indiana. Kasich's going to pull his ads out of Indiana. And then Kasich's going to run in Oregon and New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And Cruz is not going to compete there. And their idea is that they need to win delegates from Trump. Now, there's a couple of things I think are problematic about this. One is that when you have two people getting votes, you can sometimes deny a majority to the front runner, which is important when you're in some of these states when you're trying to gather delegates. And the other thing is that it plays right into Trump's narrative that he's a victim of this these party insiders getting together against him, planning to change the rules of the convention.
He's just going to get more votes now.
He is inflaming his supporters. This is inflaming Trump supporters, I think, this collusion. And it also, it erodes Cruz's brand as being an outsider, because all of a sudden he's partnering with an insider, Kasich. So I just think it really reeks of desperation.
And here's my question. If they're going to, okay, you take Iowa, I'll take this state. When push comes to shove and the end is near, who's going to, you know, say, well, I want the credit for this? There's going to be a little inner fight there as well.
Well, they both think that they're the one who's going to do ultimately seduce the delegates at the convention. So they both.
Do you see why Trump sounds so good? Because this whole political thing is crazy.
It's such an insider thing. Another problem with this thing I didn't even mention is that early voting has started in these places. I mean, people have already voted in some of these.
This early?
Sure, it's only 2 weeks away, right? So
for the primaries,
primaries.
Like, please.
So, but you know, tomorrow is what they call the Acela primary. Acela is that Amtrak line, the high-speed Amtrak rail that runs from Washington to Boston, runs through all these states: Connecticut, Delaware, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island. Those are the states that are having primaries tomorrow. And there's some polling out this morning. Trump is up by 26 points, 26 percentage points in Pennsylvania. He's up by 34 in Connecticut. He's up by 38 in Rhode Island.
But isn't this because I was telling Bill off the air, it's like if Kasich and Cruz are going to come together now and try and derail Trump's train, it's too late. They should have gotten him out of the running beforehand.
Much earlier.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't seem fair or right, and I am not voting for Trump at this point in my voting career.
At this point, I know she hedges that.
Right.
Well, I don't, you know, I don't want to anger a lot of the people out there. You vote for whom you think is best, but it's...
But not Trump.
Eric said that. But I mean, it doesn't seem right for the people who say, I'm throwing my vote behind Trump and you're telling me my vote doesn't matter. It's just, this is not fair.
Well, this is the problem they're going to face at the convention, which is that it goes against our sense of democracy and fairness, which is if Trump comes into that convention, he needs 1,237 delegates. Mm-hmm. And he's going to come in maybe with that many. If he wins by these kind of margins that these recent polls are looking at, then this all may be just, you know, chin music here. There may be no reason to talk about it. But he may come up short. He may come up with 1,100. He may come up with, you know, I mean, he's going to be short, but a little bit short, way out in front of Cruz. And, of course, miles ahead of Kasich, who doesn't have very many at all. And so the question is, well, you know, come on. He's got the most votes. He's won the most states. Shouldn't he be our party's nominee? This is his argument and the argument of his supporters. The people in the party say, well, no, the rules are that you got to get over 50%. And I just don't think that argument plays very well.
What if Cruz was ahead? Would they say that to him? Like, you're ahead, but you don't have the votes, we're going to put someone else in there.
I think probably not, because Cruz is much more of a establishment. I mean, I know he plays a renegade, but he's more of a mainstream or extreme conservative. But he is within the boundaries of acceptability for the party. Trump is just out there, right? I mean, he's got all kinds of
views
that are just you know, unorthodox, to put it.
We talked earlier that one of the Koch brothers, extreme right wingers, the Koch brothers, Charles Koch, I believe, is the one who said. He believes that Hillary Clinton might be the better option over what the Republicans are offering up. So what does he get out of that?
That was really interesting how he said that. I think that what he fears is the Republican Party just going up in a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
And somebody wrote me a letter, talked about the half-life of the radioactive explosion. How long is that going to hurt the party? And I think that what Koch is thinking is that even if Trump wins, he is so bad for the Republican brand, for his brand, that he would rather see Hillary Clinton in there for 4 years. I don't know. It does seem like it was surprising to hear Koch say that, because those guys have been putting, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars
behind an
extremely conservative candidate.
I know. That was a little bit of a shock. But I can't figure out what exactly his tactic was in saying that. I understand what he's saying.
I don't know. He may just be one of these. I mean, he's, 84 years old? Maybe he's someone who just, like, says what's on his mind. He may not have been very tactical. He may just been like, you know, your drunk uncle at Thanksgiving. Like, you know what? I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton, God. So I wouldn't
by
put
cracky, Jimmy, he would
by
say.
Cracky. By yep. Jiminy.
I'm sorry. I don't know who the Koch brothers are. I know they're rich dudes, but what does that have to do?
Well, they're rich industrialists, and they have been giving money to and supporting conservative candidates, Republican candidates, for years. And they're big players. Every time you talk about the Citizens United decision, the Koch brothers comes up. Is that Steve Bertrand walking?
That would be Steve Bertrand, yes.
Man.
Yes.
He's handsome.
Don't
guy.
Look directly at him. He asks that you're not. I know you no eye contact.
I hate having Steve. To back out of the room, too. That seems a bit much.
Yeah. You'd be used to it by now, but.
All right. Well, thank you. A lot going on in the news, certainly, this week, Eric.
Lots to talk about next week, too. Sure.
I know there will be. Steve Bertrand is next. He'll tell you what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, don't go anywhere. Your help is going to be needed in this segment.
All right.
Please
stay put.
Please stay close by.
All right. Passover is happening.
That's
Passover
correct.
Is happening right now.
Yep.
All right. How long does it go? I'm Catholic. I don't know much about the Jewish religion. Mm-hmm. I would like to learn a little something. Passover is...
Start of Friday night. It's over this coming Saturday night.
And what do you do? Well, you tell Passover stories
you
to
tell the You have two seders, which is the service that explains Passover. But basically, for the entire week, you don't eat anything with leavened bread in it. So no flour, nothing that rises.
So matzo balls, okay.
Matzo balls are good. Matzo balls are good. They're made with matzo meal.
Oh, those are so good. I'm telling you.
You
I did not
that?
Come up to get the soup. I'm sorry, Kim.
So, that's all right.
Kim brought some especially for you.
Well,
and you
not
didn't.
Really.
No?
Her and Judy.
Yeah.
I'll let Judy have it. I'm not going to fight Judy over anything,
oh,
especially
matzo.
There's
plenty, trust me.
All right. Well, there's some news that came out across the pond that marijuana is kosher for Passover, according to
I saw
a
that
rabbi.
With the rabbi blessing it. How funny is that?
Well, now, so what makes something kosher?
Well, a rabbi has to be in attendance, right? Is that
right.
How
and
that
it's,
works?
It depends on what it is, but... Things have to be killed, like meat or animals.
What did I just tell you, Bill?
Has to be killed certain ways. There's certain things that have to be done in order to make it kosher.
It's Wendy, you suggested that it has
well,
something
to do...
Well,
I don't want to bring that up on the air, but it's right. A certain way in which the animal's killed and perhaps... I don't want to get graphic, but isn't
it
there
is
a...
It is pretty graphic.
Isn't there a way that the blood has to drain from the animal first?
Yeah, and, you know, and then some meat is just taboo.
Like pork.
Pork, shellfish.
Yeah.
Just, well, then that's a non-starter.
Okay, so no shellfish ever?
No.
During Passover?
No, ever.
Ever, ever?
Ever, ever.
Oh, I didn't know ever, ever.
Oh,
you
yeah,
were
ever,
only
ever.
Half Jewish and not very good at
no
that.
No pork ever, well, no shellfish ever.
But Kim, I've said this, and this always baffled me. For people who don't know, I'm Jewish on my dad's side of the family, Catholic on my mom's side. I don't follow either, but that's the way I was brought up. And for many of my relatives, they would not have pork under any circumstances unless we were having Chinese food, in which case it was a must, the sweet and sour pork.
Everybody has their own rules. Come on.
Well, and Catholics, too, we do the same thing. We kind of bend the rules that make it convenient for us sometimes.
Yeah, I get that.
And how do you, like, if... So, all right, here's the deal. There is a rabbi that blessed marijuana. He's 88 years old. He can be seen with another prominent rabbi in a video uploaded to YouTube by pro-legislation group Cannabis Israel,
yeah.
In which they are presented with cannabis leaves and partake in the leaves being blessed. However...
He's making matzo bong soup.
There you go.
It is... In 2013, an Orthodox rabbi ruled that distributing and smoking marijuana is kosher, but only for medicinal purposes. Using the drug for fun, he said, was forbidden.
While winking?
I don't think so.
Wink, 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 wink.
Some people take their religious views very seriously.
Sure.
Another rabbi, or the same rabbi, reportedly said that, quote, taking drugs to escape the world is certainly forbidden, but people using it for medical reasons are using it in a kosher way.
Right.
Now, when you go to a restaurant and you get, you know, our food is kosher, is there some trust that goes there? Or,
yeah,
I mean,
well,
could they get in trouble if they
well,
say
yeah,
it's kosher?
I mean, the only restaurants that are kosher are like certified kosher restaurants that are checked out by rabbis. They only have kosher meat. They don't serve milk and meat together. I mean, there's a lot of rules.
What's going on with bazooka bubblegum? Because for some reason you see it, especially like in more Jewish communities. Anywhere they sell bazooka bubblegum, they assure you that it is kosher.
Well, you can buy it kosher for Passover.
But why? Like of all
some,
the...
Well, because certain... I mean...
Is Bazooka Joe Jewish?
Well, normally there's corn syrup in it, so you can't technically have that on Passover. But if it's kosher for Passover bazooka, then the corn syrup is out of it.
Oh, okay.
So it's special bazooka gum.
It is.
Yes, and you can get it 100 pieces on Amazon. Kosher bazooka gum.
Triple the price, probably.
Yeah, let's see how much it is. It's $29.99. Yeah. 100 pieces, though.
Direct from Israel.
Is it right from
Israel?
And
you open the cartoons and they're in Hebrew.
Yes. You brought one in or somebody did.
I have some at home. I'll bring it to you tomorrow.
But it's just funny to me that Bazooka Joe, who's usually,
he's your everyman.
Right. Usually. Every kid. But during the Jewish holidays, he gets very spiritual. It's really funny.
He has a Hebrew name.
Right. Right. Right.
What would it be? Bazooka.
Bazooka Mo.
Bazooka what?
Yehuda.
Yeah, that's what it is.
All right. Well, just so you know, if you're taking...
chewing a lot of gum, is that good for you? I don't know. Bazooka Joe, you sound so worried. Do I? I don't know.
Does it trail off like that when Jewish people speak?
My relatives would. It was like I'd be late for school the next day because one of my uncles hadn't finished a thought. I gotta go to school. I'm almost done.
Kim, are some of your relatives like that?
Absolutely not.
All right, they must be listening.
Only Bill's.
So, and now do you have to go to church every day? Is there just...
Not church.
Or synagogue?
Temple.
Not every day for Passover, but at the beginning and the end.
And is this like what the Catholics have for Easter? Is this like likened to that?
Similar foods.
Or leavened
to that? I mean, there are
that?
Some similar foods because mm-hmm. there are eggs, there's lamb. I mean, yeah, similar.
But there's no Passover bunny.
No,
should have the Passover
although
bunny.
Bazooka Joe should come up with his Passover bunny friend. He could be in the comics.
There
right.
You go.
Instead of eggs, you just get gum. All the kids get gum. Yay. It's not as exciting.
All right. Well, I just wanted to know. So there is some marijuana that's kosher for Passover.
Right.
But again, and I love this quote, using the drug for fun is forbidden.
Right.
Only for medicinal
only
purposes.
Only medicinal purposes.
So no puff puff Passover.
Right, Kevin. That's correct.
Happy Passover.
Happy
to
Passover
everybody.
To everybody. All right. We'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you so much.
I'm thrilled to bring that news to you.
You partake in pop-up restaurants. There's one in the nearby vicinity that you and Kevin frequent.
Yes, true.
Did you know that there's this Saved by the Bell diner? It's going to be a pop-up diner.
I've heard of it. I don't know where it is or when
it
opens.
It's in Wicker Park.
Is it already open?
I haven't heard of it. I just found out about it. It got 4,500 reservations in 15 minutes.
Did
so
it really?
So it's going to extend its run. Who is going to go to this besides Screech?
Saved by the Bell, as horrendously bad as it was, had a huge cult following.
I watched it, but it's not...
But you never watched it and thought to yourself, if only there was a restaurant that encapsulated the flavor of the show, I would visit it and eat there.
I don't even think people who loved it would say that. And I did like it. It's called Saved by the Max.
Why is it Saved by the Max?
I don't
know. It
doesn't
say? I don't understand why they wouldn't just call it the Saved by the Bell restaurant.
Let's see what they have to say.
All right.
I'm on their homepage right now. It's savedbythemax.com. We're open Monday through Sunday, serving dinner nightly, brunch on weekends, a late night menu every night.
Yeah.
It's sold out for the month of June already. So here's...
Will everything be real sugary like it was on the television show? Will everything taste like too much sugar?
I don't even know what they're doing.
I have no idea.
I mean,
either.
Unless it looks like the classroom of Saved by the Bell.
That would be their best move.
They have Tori's Fried Chicken. Who was Tori?
I don't remember.
Kevin, you watched it.
Yeah, I don't remember Tori, but I remember they also like always went to that diner in the show, too. It was like one of their hangouts.
Didn't they? Yeah, right. Yeah.
Is that where Seinfeld got the great idea? They stole it from Saved by the Bell. Kidding. AC Sliders? Who's AC?
Wasn't
AC Slater? He's Mario Lopez.
Yeah.
Oh, Mac and Screech?
Instead of mac and cheese? I guess. I mean, if that's what appeals to people is just taking the food names and naming them after characters on the show.
Bayside Burger.
That was the town they lived in, right?
Evidently, you watched
Bayside,
it more than
California.
I did.
I saw a couple episodes, and I think I saw maybe three or four over the years, and every time I'd watch, I'd go, what am I doing? Why am I subjecting myself to this?
Please tell me I'm wrong. I want to say the teacher was Belden or Principal Belden. I hope I'm wrong.
Not sure.
Preppy BLT.
Yeah.
Miss Bliss Candied Bacon.
All right. That sounds delicious.
I can't believe they're going to have trivia night. I can't believe this sold out in 45,000 in 15, 4,500, excuse me.
In 4,500
reservations in 15 minutes. And because of that, it's going to extend its run. It's at 1941 West North Avenue, 80-seat diner. Doesn't open until June 1st.
Yeah.
But organizers have now decided to keep the diner open until August 31st to meet the demand. I don't understand. Tickets are $35, include appetizer, entree, and dessert. Drinks are not included. For those who weren't able to book a reservation, the diner is accepting walk-ins for brunch and late-night service for all 3 months on a first-come, first-serve basis.
That's where I'm taking my wife on our anniversary. It's going to be our 25th wedding anniversary. That's where we're going.
Did you guys used to watch that together?
No. She has much more discerning taste than I do. Much more.
Keith, you were a fan of Saved by the Bell, huh?
Yes, I was.
Do you mind me asking how old you are?
51 today.
Oh, wow. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Why, Keith, is the question, I guess. Not about your birthday. I get why there, but why would you watch the Saved by the Bell so often?
I think it was because it was on when my youngest daughter really liked it.
Oh. Well, that's a good reason.
That is a good reason, because I watched iCarly because of that, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yes.
Did you watch it when your kids weren't in the room with you? That's the real test.
Yes.
Because I did that with Blue's Clues. Like, I'd watch that with my kids, and then there were times where my kids couldn't watch it, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to miss Blue's Clues just because they're not here, and I'd watch it.
I do get that.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you're not planning on going to the Saved by the Bell diner.
No, I don't think so.
You can't get in, Keith. It's all sold out. Forget it.
They probably want to see Screech out of jail.
Is Screech in jail?
Yeah.
I hope. Is he really? I didn't know that.
Haven't you kept up on him?
No.
He shot someone, didn't he?
Screech.
He stabbed him.
Oh, he stabbed him. Where have you been?
Screech stabbed somebody? Seriously?
Yes, this is not a joke.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It was in a Wisconsin bar, I believe.
Wow.
All right, we'll get you caught up on that. Do you know the name of their, did they go to a diner or something in Saved by the Bell?
And I think it was the Max.
Oh, that's why it would be called Saved by the Max. All right, now it makes
sense.
That's right. All right.
Yep.
We have solved another mystery.
And what was his real name, Screech?
Dustin Diamond.
Oh, I put Desmond.
No, Dustin Diamond.
All right, I'll tell you what happened to him because it is none too pretty.
Keith, thank you, and have a great birthday.
Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
All right, Paul is maybe going to head over to Saved by the Max. Are you going to head over there, Paul?
Yeah, I would like to. You know, I can't believe you guys are really not into it. I mean, I'm 36 years old, so I think anyone my age would love to see that place.
But you watched it kind of as an adult, and you don't have kids. You can't blame this on little kids. You were watching it for your own personal enjoyment, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was. It came on Saturday morning, 10:30. I remember going to the grocery store with Mom.
Yeah.
We'd come home and Saved by the Bell would be on every Saturday. We'd watch it and love it.
All right. Well, and you don't feel guilty at all, do you?
I guarantee anybody my age would, just be dying to check this place out for sure.
All right. We'll try and get in. It's only open till August 31st. Extended stay.
Yeah. Are you guys going to go there?
Oh, yes. All right.
Yeah, we'll meet
up. We'll go. All right. We'll see you there.
Thank you so much.
Remember when they tried to open Cheers bars and there was some sort of a problem over the likenesses or the names? They were going to open them. I think they did open them in a couple of airports. I think Minnesota had one.
That sounds familiar.
And they had two giant figures of Norman Cliff sitting at the bar, at every bar.
Like the Blues Brothers they have at Midway Airport, like they were...
Well, these were like just, I think they were made of plaster or something, and they just put two figures at the bar that looked like Cliff and Norm. But that didn't work. But then there have been, like, what's one that did work? Ponderosa and Bonanza Steakhouses were after, you know, the show Bonanza. Those were both pretty successful.
Yeah, but they didn't have memorabilia in there, if I remember. I know Ponderosa didn't.
No,
they just
they
had
didn't
those
really...
plastic skewers to see if it was well done, medium, or rare.
Right. Bubba Gump Shrimp has been around for 20-something years.
That's still
operational? Yeah, they still have Bubba Gump Shrimp. They're all over the place.
By the way, Dustin Diamond checked into a Wisconsin jail on Friday, January 15th. He had to begin his four-month sentence related to a 2014 barroom stabbing.
Oh, I didn't know this.
He was charged with carrying a concealed weapon and disorderly conduct after a Christmas Day barroom brawl took a turn for the worse. 39-year-old Diamond stabbed a man with a switchblade. You really don't remember this in the news?
I had no idea.
I remember this because I think we were working on him as a guest, and then this kind of happened, which ruined things.
Stephen Avery can make phone calls from his cell. Why can't Dustin Diamond?
Imagine you're a prisoner in a jail, and you get a new roommate, and it's Screech from Saved by the Bell. What would that be like?
I can't even imagine that.
That would be the weirdest thing in the world. Do people tell you look like Screech from Saved by the Bell? Yes. Okay, because you do.
Well, he's getting out May 15th, so he'll be able to make an appearance at
the opening, at the grand opening.
Wow. He argued that he had pulled the knife to defend himself and fiancée Amanda Schutz, who was
You can't say that on the radio.
Who was later found guilty of disorderly conduct. The pair were also ordered to pay $1,500 in restitution to the stabbing victim, who suffered a non-life-threatening wound.
So at the restaurant, no knives in his order, in his honor. They'll only have spoons and forks. You can't have a knife.
Certainly not a steak knife.
Right. Could I get a knife? No, we can't have no knives in the restaurant, sir.
All right. Well, you can go to Saved by the Max and try and get a...
You can't get in. It's like the hardest ticket in town.
I can't even believe it. All right, well, it's in Wicker Park. So,
what's the Broadway play that nobody can get into? What's the
Hamilton?
It's the Hamilton of restaurants.
Oh God, don't say that, please. I can't believe it.
All right, we'll take a quick break and then solve more of the world's problems. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, it's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand is here as well, and I have a news story that I would like to discuss with y'all.
All right, we'll do that.
There is a gentleman who was a sperm donor.
All right.
Let's just say that.
All right.
In August, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And he fathered at least 36 children around the world.
You do that? Can you be that prolific of a donor? I didn't even know that. That's a lot of kids.
Well, I don't know how it works artificially, but I know there's probably...
That's Dennis Rodman's dad territory.
Well, I don't know how many children one vial can father. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It only takes one, the magic one.
That's true.
Yeah, you can make more than one vial, too.
Yeah. Repeat customers. You get a punch card. Come in every week.
But you get paid for it, don't you?
I think so.
I may have found a perfect job for some people
heaven.
I know.
Look, you're going to give me money?
Well,
see you tomorrow morning.
Listen,
right early.
There are a lot of people that cannot conceive,
right.
And there are some couples who need to go outside to get either a sperm cell or an egg cell.
Oh, you shouldn't do it outside, Wendy. So somebody will call the cops.
I'm not going to get through this story, am I, with the
sorry.
Two of you?
I'm sorry. We'll behave.
All right. Well, the Toronto Star reported recently that 39-year-old Chris Aggles was very busy.
Yes.
He was also known as donor number 9323.
That's his NMLS number.
Something like that. he was known as donor 9323 by the global sperm bank Zytec.
Yeah.
He said he was a healthy man.
Yeah.
He had an IQ of 160,
speaks
five languages,
and
an acclaimed musician working on a PhD degree in neuroscience engineering.
That sounds promising.
It does. And there are women who, let me go on with the story and then
I
have some thoughts on this.
Okay.
Well, again, 36 children he helped to create.
Wow.
And it turns out he was not all of those things, a healthy man with an IQ of 160, speaking five languages, and a musician working on a PhD degree in neuroscience engineering. He was actually a mentally ill felon who lied on all of his donor forms.
Yeah.
And it went undiscovered for more than a decade.
That's quite a difference
from
what he claimed.
But, I mean, how, how hard would it be to lie on your donor form?
They must do some kind of background check, don't
Evidently
they?
Not.
When you say felon, are you implying that he was currently incarcerated? Is he in jail as we speak?
Well, here's what happens. He's actually a college dropout. He's been diagnosed with schizophrenia, bipolar, and narcissistic personality disorder, according to the Toronto Star. And some of these things can be hereditary. Okay, so
of course,
a problem in itself. The newspaper reported Agalise also has a history of run-ins with the law for burglary, disorderly conduct, and driving under the influence.
Yeah.
Families only began to unravel the discrepancy after this sperm bank Zytex inadvertently revealed Agalise's identity in an email. Now, three Canadian families with children between 4 and 8 years old are suing the sperm bank, alleging the firm allowed Agalise to continue selling his sperm even after they discovered he provided misinformation, which, if that's the case, that is pretty bad of the company.
I would imagine that's a major problem, I would think.
The company used the donor's sperm to conceive at least 36 children in the United States, Canada, and Great Britain, and maintains it did nothing wrong and said in an open letter that it relies on the honor system for donors' self-reported medical history and personal information.
No, that's not good enough.
That is not good enough. Angie Collins, whose 8-year-old son is among the children fathered by Agalise and is involved in the lawsuit, told the Toronto Star that she first learned of this guy's medical history when she received a Facebook message from another woman who used his sperm.
Yeah.
So donor number, hey, anybody, there's like a group now. Kids of donor 9323.
But imagine the horror of these parents.
Terrible.
You know, who are going through these accounts and these descriptions of men.
Yeah.
And this is the sad thing, too. This woman, Angie Collins, her 8-year-old son, has not shown any signs of mental illness at this point, but could just turn on a dime in puberty, which is absolutely true. You can't even diagnose bipolar disorder until a kid has hit puberty and gone beyond it. Schizophrenia, these are some hereditary things.
I know the company says they're going on the honor system.
That's a load of NMLS number.
Yes, it is. But if we're buying a used car, we go and we do research and we get a printout on the history of the car. With a person, a child, it's much more important to know as much as you possibly can about the background and what they're predestined to have, you know, within them. This is awful. You
like
can't
a Carfax report?
Yeah. I mean, if you were going to buy a car that's 2 years old, you'd get a Carfax report and look it up and go, oh, man, it looks like the suspension system isn't very good in the car. The engine's a problem. But with a kid, that's so much more important. This is terrible.
But here's the problem that this came out. And as you mentioned, Steve, really, the parents, this would be just like, you know, you're worried about what's going to happen to your son or your daughter. That's why, almost in a weird way, you shouldn't know who the sperm donor is.
You don't think you should know?
I think you should know if there were any family problems, for hereditary reasons.
Yeah.
But you know
the number. You don't know who it is.
But key things about
right,
that person.
Right.
Not their name and where they live, but you know, because don't they? I don't know if this is just legend because we've not used a donor, but. Don't they charge more? Like if you're going for somebody who's real, real higher echelon, don't they charge more for that normally? They do, right?
I thought so. But again, how can you prove it? I mean, you know, people lie on their resumes all the time. This is
right.
a sperm donor report.
Right. This isn't good at all.
I know.
That's terrible.
But it's...
And the company's claiming, they're saying we've done nothing wrong?
No, they say it's the honor system. You know, if somebody lies on their form...
That's not good enough.
And the company is based in August, Georgia. And this perfect donor, if it seems too good to be true.
Yeah, I guess.
And then, you know, you can't love your child any less. It just really puts things in a really bad situation once this has become public.
I don't think it falls under the bracket of loving them less. You would just be more concerned if some of the things that this guy has going on in his life could possibly be passed on genetically, then you've got nothing but problems ahead. I'm not saying that it's definite. Just because one person has... His history is horrendous. Just because his history is as bad as it is, it doesn't necessarily mean his offspring would be. But
right, and people with bipolar don't always, break the law
right.
either.
Right, of course.
Right.
But see, now these people chose, oh, okay, let's do donor 9323. He's got an IQ of 160.
Yeah.
He speaks five languages. Oh, honey, look at this. He's an acclaimed musician. Little Junior will be a musician.
Right.
So that's kind of like trying to pick the cheerleader and the football quarterback.
Yeah, it's very misleading. Because I guarantee you, of the 36, several people chose this person because of the incredible resume. Yeah, yeah.
And that's why I don't think you should know anything other than family history
In terms of the donor. Of what they've had disease-wise?
Yes.
Or what they're, yeah.
Because isn't that weird, too, that you're going, oh, I'm going to pick somebody who has an IQ of 160 and is a musician. That doesn't even translate to, yes, genetically there could be some predisposition to have these intelligence, but it's also how you raise them as well.
It is, but wouldn't you be, if you were in this position, if you were in the position to use a donor and you had that option, not just for medical things, but they also threw down the option of what that person's personality traits were, not just medical background, but personality traits. Wouldn't you be swayed by that? I know you're saying that you'd rather not know, but if you were given that option, you wouldn't want to look up and find out what sort of personality traits are involved? I would.
I don't know that that matters. I would like to see, you know, we have cancer in our family. We have diabetes. We have heart disease. We pretty much, I say, check yes to everything on a form I'm filling out. So I would like to see, you know, no history of diabetes or heart disease. That's really all I'd look for.
That's so important.
I don't think you should know the other stuff.
I'd want, if all things were equal and they offered that as an option, I would want to see that option.
But doesn't that predispose you to think, oh, my kid's going to be a genius now, and maybe they're not? I feel like there's negative stuff that could come from something you're expecting from this kid before this kid has even become a kid.
I guess so, but it's not that it gives you false expectations. It's that you say to yourself, much like when you're choosing a mate and you see something in that person, in that man or woman that you like.
I check Jim's ACT. I can't even say it. ATC scores. That's good, Wendy. I wouldn't even know what it was. I mean, no, I don't. You look at their intelligence? What do you do, a Google search?
I would want.
They didn't have Google when you were
started
dating Terry.
No.
You took her word for it.
I just believed her.
And she was right. She's smart, funny.
But all those things, like, even though you're using a donor, I would want there to be some carryover and say, here's a couple of things either myself or my wife are good at. I would hope my child has kind of similar possibilities. Not so much. It's weird. I wouldn't disclude them, but if given the option of knowing those
things. That's why I feel like you shouldn't know it, because you should just be like, okay, no health issues.
Right.
I don't know. If I have blonde hair, blue eyes, maybe do you pick somebody with the genetics for blonde hair, blue eyes?
I know people have. I know that there are people who have done that.
I don't know. Then it's like you're really playing Simon Bar Sinister and like creating this perfect child that may not turn out to be perfect.
I know there's no guarantees on that, but I would still want to know what was in the DNA background of whatever donor we were using. If that's available to me, I would rather.
But
have
you'd want it to be accurate,
idea.
Not just like.
I would much rather. I'd far prefer it to be accurate than just what this guy's done. All right, what are your thoughts on this? We're at 312-981-7200. Give us a call or a text. We'll get those answers next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I'm not saying words correctly today.
They're overrated.
All right, well, that's good to know. All right, we're talking about this, quote, perfect sperm donor who fathered at least 36 children, and it turns out that he suffers from schizophrenia. He had been diagnosed with schizophrenia, bipolar, narcissistic personality disorder, and has had run-ins with the law for burglary, disorderly conduct, and driving under the influence. None of those are murder.
All right. That's very true. You found the positive. You're right. He's not a murderer.
The story said August, Georgia, and everyone's saying it's Augusta, Georgia. And I do know there is an Augusta, Georgia. Evidently, they forgot the A.
Oh.
So it's an Augusta, Georgia sperm bank. And what it turns out is this company said they're not at fault after a lawsuit has been filed because they said it relies on the honor system for donors' self-reported medical history and personal information. So they're kind of off the hook.
They shouldn't be.
They
That's
shouldn't
not
be.
Good
That's
enough.
Right. And I just wonder if you know all this information beforehand,
yeah.
if you expect things. When we had Dr. John Duffy on, a clinical psychologist last week, and it's like you have one smart kid and one kid who's not so smart. If that not so smart kid hears that, they're going to not be so smart because why would they try?
They've been labeled.
So, you know, there's something to be said for that if you know who the sperm donor is. And
yeah.
I don't know. Is this Joan?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Joan. Do you know anything about this or have an opinion?
Well, yeah, I have an opinion. First of all, I do think that they should let you know if there's any anything like mental illness or medical conditions in the family history. That makes complete sense. But as far as someone being a musician or having a high IQ, I have two boys. My husband and I, neither of us can play an instrument to save our lives, but both of them are really talented musicians. The older one can play anything he picks up. And they're both good athletes, and neither of us are athletes. So I think it's what they're exposed to, what their interests are, what their desires are. It has nothing to do with genetics.
And, I mean, you know, everybody in my family says that their IQ is really high, and then they look at you. And I said, well... But seriously, I mean, that doesn't guarantee that your offspring is going to have the same thing.
Exactly, exactly. So I think, you know, those things should be taken out of the equation, but definitely the health and wellness issues need to be known. I know that we have you're talking about all your family illnesses. We have a history of alcoholism in our family, and that's one thing. I have a 21-year-old and a 19-year-old, and I from the time they were 15, I'm like, okay, you know, watch out for the alcohol because, you know, we have a history of it in our family and you just don't know. And you know, telling them those kind of things. But, you know, oh, I think you should, you know, become an interior designer because that's what your mom is. I mean, that's ridiculous.
I agree. And it might put some needless pressure on the kids, too.
Right, right.
Like you're expecting this kid to be a genius because his father had a 160 IQ, which is that really high, by the way?
That's not bad. Yeah, but you're not. It's not that you're expecting them to be a genius, but you're just, if given the option, let's say you've got two doors and one of them has the donor that is a genius and the other one isn't. Why wouldn't you take the one that is?
You should pick the one that you are. But you're a genius, so I
can
see why you would do that.
That's true. Right.
But we actually have two friends that are, you know, brilliant scientists, but I don't know if I'd want them, you know, they may be, you know, one of them is, you know, a great guy, easy to go along with. The other one is like really difficult to have a conversation with, you know, so is genius good or is it bad? You know, it's like common sense stuff.
It depends on the person, too.
But maybe that could be one of the options is, you know, a great personality. Fun to talk to. Maybe that's where you're scoring high points.
But that doesn't mean that your offspring is
going to
have
that. I know that. But
it doesn't mean you're going to be that way.
But there's a much better chance with certain characteristics if one parent or both. We were talking about Prince earlier. Both of his parents were accomplished musicians because I kept thinking to myself, that just doesn't come out of nowhere. You can't be that good. Yeah, well, it can. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we appreciate the call. Thank you for that.
No problem.
All right.
Enjoy you guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. And real quickly here before we break for news, Rodney, what would you want to know?
Oh, I would definitely want to know. I don't buy the honor system stuff that clinic is talking about. That's just crazy. They need to be more responsible because you start mixing gene pools and you start, you know, in the church, they call it spiritual DNA. And in the scientific arena, they call it DNA, but the church alludes to the fact that there's some spiritual attributes or characteristics that flow over into the baby from the parents.
Yeah.
And you find that to be true, and then it becomes harder. I'll give you a perfect example real quick. Look at Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown.
Right.
You look at their daughter. You look at a guy that we found out later had mental illness, bipolar, and you had one had addiction. That just made it harder for that daughter. And you see the results.
Yeah, but I don't know how much of that is what Bobby Christina saw as opposed to what was internal. And, you know, what about if you adopt a baby and you don't know who the parents are? You know, I just don't. I feel like too much information is not a good thing in people's hands sometimes.
Yeah, my sister worked in that area in the state of Illinois, And I want to tell you, son, she told me a long time ago, she said, you're rolling the dice if you adopt a kid. I'm telling you. She said, I'm not telling you not to, but you're rolling the dice because you really don't know what you're going to get.
But so many adoptive parents, they know that and accept that, and they just say to themselves, despite that, I want to parent a child. So,
and Rodney, some of us, it's a gamble when you have your own biological kids, too. You don't know what's going to happen. We appreciate your call, though, very much. Thank you, Rodney.
All right, we have to take a break. We've got news next. Steve will give you the news, and then we have a whole lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. So if you push the button in, you can talk, and if
you don't,
the light goes on. The Merriam-Webster company, these are the people who make your dictionaries, Merriam-Webster.
And who has a bound dictionary anymore?
I know we have them. I don't remember
the last time.
It's been a while since I bought a new one.
And you know how many words have been added since your last edition?
Yeah. Well, this year alone, Merriam-Webster has just announced that they have added 1,400 new terms and phrases, and then they've also added 700 new senses of existing terms. So that means the word is already in the Merriam-Webster unabridged dictionary, but it has an additional meaning to what it used to have. So in total, you got 2,100 new words and changed words just from last year alone.
For instance, sweet could be you are so sweet or
right.
Sweet.
Right. That's a good example. That's a great example. I will give you some of these words. Now, I have to be honest. Some of these, I'm shocked, haven't been in the dictionary for a long time. I don't know what they're waiting for on some of these. What was the one I just saw? Oh, wacky tobacky just made the Merriam-Webster dictionary. And you know what that is, right?
420.
It's marijuana. It's one of the slang terms for marijuana.
That is already past. It's no one uses that anymore.
Isn't that old? They were saying that in high school when we were in high school.
But it was slang, and they didn't put slang terms in the dictionary back then, did they?
I think they did. They would just there'd be some sort of notation in the dictionary just saying slang, just to let you know.
That should have been in the 70s.
It should have been in a long time ago. All right. What about this one? Athleisure. It's the word leisure, but preceded by A-T-H. What is athleisure? I'll give you a slight hint. It's a noun. Yeah.
Athleisure is somebody who's not a professional athlete, but they like to work out in their spare time.
That makes more sense than what the word actually means. What you just described, that's what athleisure should be.
Kevin, do you have a guess?
What about an athlete that does something that's not necessarily athletic, such as competitive video gaming or something?
No, that's also a great idea, but incorrect on that one as well.
We're going to start our own dictionary, Kevin.
I like it.
It's a vacation where you do sports.
Also a tremendous idea, but
you can
again,
be on
incorrect.
Our writing team, Steve.
None of those are right. Athleisure is a form of clothing. It's casual clothing designed to be worn.
Yoga pants.
For exercising or general use. Yes, yoga pants would be considered athleisure.
And now if you're on Facebook and you get all these crazy ads in your face, there are now dressy yoga pants.
Yo, I've seen that.
Like you can wear them to work.
Yeah, right. That's nice. That's your Lululemons, right?
Well, Lululemon is an expensive brand of workout wear, but these are like a different, they're like dress pants that also, like, nothing looks better than when you go to a health club and you see a guy in jeans on the treadmill.
Sure.
This, you'd never tell that
sure.
I just wore them to work.
Right. They're all purpose.
Right.
Absolutely. What does this mean? This is a new word. It's first time in the Merriam-Webster Unabridged Dictionary, 2016 edition. Nomophobia. What is nomophobia?
People who are afraid of the Phil Collins song.
No, that's not it. That's not even close.
What is it again? Nomophobia?
Nomophobia.
The opposite of homophobia?
Nope. It is not that. Steve, any ideas? If somebody was a nomophobic, what would they be afraid of?
Japanese food?
Nope. It's not Japanese food. And it's not Hideo Nomo, former pitcher for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
What song was that by Phil Collins, by the way? Was it I Don't Care Anymore?
Nomo. I think it was.
Okay.
I think so. If you have nomophobia, you are afraid of not having access to a working cell phone.
How in the world does that correlate?
Because you don't have your cell phone, Nomo.
No. Oh, that's actually...
That's how.
That's not it.
I was going to say no is. Mobile. No.
Oh, that's yeah, it. That is.
Is that it?
That's it.
Kevin, you're like going to be my lifeline. No. I'll be on a show. I'll need a lifeline. Bill will give me a joke. I believe everything he says.
Right.
I will say it and look like a jerk.
Maybe. And then you'll go to me and I'll say, we'll figure it out.
Possibly. All right. Now, I would not have known that one. Now, this has been around for quite a few years, although it's really hit prominence in the last year or two. And I think you'll all know this one. Revenge porn. What is revenge porn?
Well, totally. Like, I'll just use myself as an example.
Please do.
Say I have naked pictures and yep. I'm texting them to someone.
Yeah.
And then I break up with them.
Yep.
They're going to take those pictures and make them public.
That is the exact.
WGNradio.com.
Right. You can find them there.
No, that might make it to WGN Plus.
I don't know. Maybe. We'll see. We'll see how the pictures look. That's what you just described is it exactly. That would be your classic case of revenge porn. That will be in the Merriam-Webster dictionary for the first time.
Oh, that's sad, isn't
yep.
it?
Yep. This one I know Kevin knows, and I kind of understand this, although I'm a little bit confused on all the terms involved here. But Bitcoin. What is a Bitcoin? That's in the dictionary for the first time.
That is a mode of payment that is not actually money. It's more electronic.
It's digital currency. Right, Kevin? Is that what
Yeah,
that
I
is?
Mean, I don't even know that much about it, but yeah, it's...
You can essentially buy things online just by using Bitcoin, but I don't understand. I know this is weird because the world exists based on this, but are you paying for those coins? Like, can you
no,
put in
No, there's not an actual coin involved in, from what I understand.
Yeah, but it somehow correlates to currency because there was even, I remember there was talks of like ATMs where you could cash in Bitcoins.
Right.
I don't remember that. Yeah, I
don't
remember how it works.
Bitcoin, it says here, is a digital currency created for use in peer-to-peer online transactions.
What does that mean? What if we're not peers?
Well, then you couldn't trade.
You cannot.
A peer would accept Bitcoin.
Right.
If I don't accept Bitcoin, then you can't buy something from me with Bitcoin.
But it does. But there's no physicality to
it,
right?
No, it doesn't exist.
It's strictly, its only existence is an online entity. You can't...
iPay or PayPal?
No, because PayPal is legitimate.
You have to put money in it.
But there are other ones they're doing now, too. But, you know, if you think of it, we're not on the gold standard, you know?
Right.
The quarter that you buy something with isn't worth 25 cents.
Right.
What about my doubloons?
It's symbolic, just like a Bitcoin digit would be.
Yeah.
When you said Kevin would know this, I thought you were going to say the term was Magic the Gatherer.
No, that's separate.
That's already in the dictionary.
That's in there.
Hemsworths, we know.
Right. Kevin's an honorary Hemsworth. All right, we have more of these. These are words that for the first time ever, congratulations to all these words, by the way, for the first time ever, they will be included in the new Merriam-Webster Unabridged Dictionary. You may know some, you may not. We'll cover more next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Weekday mornings, 4 to 10, it has everything you need to know and some things you just need to see. WGN-TV Morning News is Chicago's must-watch morning news.
We have more words for you from the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, but first, there's a phrase that I believe, Wendy, you have coined, and it's a Latin phrase. And what is that word?
It's called judus interruptus.
Judus interruptus, and what would that be exactly?
It means when we have to talk to Judd Surratt right now, and then we'll get back to our words now in the Merriam Dictionary.
That word.
I did not mean to interruptus you. I
Come
could have
on.
Interruptus as you later.
It's always a pleasure. We have to talk Blackhawks because this is the all-important Game 7.
You got it. Do or die tonight. We'll see if the boys are ready to go. Obviously, they got a lot of momentum having won the last two games, and it sounds like, listen, this is a team that likes to say it gets better the deeper a series goes. Well, we've certainly seen that here in the last two games. They had a hard time solving Brian Elliott and the Blues in the first few games of the series. They've cranked out 10 goals here in the last two, and we'll see if the Blackhawks can carry that momentum here into Game 7.
Judd, what is it about what you just said, about how a team, most notably the Blackhawks, gets better as a series goes on? It's some sort of familiarity, right? They're realizing what their opponents can and cannot do. Is that what it comes down to?
Well, I think that's part of it, but I also think the deeper a series goes, and I don't think that the Blackhawks want to go to a Game 6 or a Game 7 in order to decide a series, but I think things become more emotional, things become more urgent, things become more desperate. And when they start to play that way, you can see the impact that it has on their game. The Blues admitted that they had a hard time with the pace, especially in the second period of Game 6. They struggled with that. if the Blackhawks can again channel some of that urgency and desperation into their game tonight, I think the Blues are going to have a hard time keeping up with the pace here in Game 7.
It was a complete turnaround from first period into second period in the last game, in game number 6. And I was talking to Bill about this. With Andrew Shaw gone for that one day, lines were changed a little bit, and it seemed like they worked a little harder because one of the constants was missing. Any truth to that?
I think they were in a desperate situation, Wendy. Remember, they were facing two elimination games, so they had to find a way in order to keep themselves alive in the series, and they were able to get Andrew Shaw back, and obviously he scored a big power play goal, which essentially capped things in Game 6. What I think it triggered from Joel is, and he's talked about this before, they only put Kane and Taves together usually when things look bleak. But what it also did was he balanced out the lines in such a way that you've got scoring really up and down that lineup now. Even a guy like Dale Weiss, and he had the game winner in Game 6, is a threat, and he is a proven playoff performer. He's had some huge goals here in the past, so it makes the Blackhawks a lot harder to check. And one of the things that was elusive for them in the first four games of the series was the four-line rotation, getting everybody involved. But as the series has progressed, and certainly with these new combinations, you're getting that, and because of that, you've seen impact as the Blackhawks have started to pick them apart and score at will.
This is Artemi Panarin's first playoff, isn't it?
Well, it is in the National Hockey League, but last year in Russia, he was a part of a championship team in the KHL. So I don't think this is completely unfamiliar to him. Listen, it's been a pretty seamless transition, Wendy and Bill, for Artemi Panarin to come over, and you've got obvious cultural differences, you've got language differences, the game is a little bit different here, but he has made a quick and speedy transition. He is not afraid. When the games get faster and the games get more intense, he's not a guy, as we've seen here in this series, that shies away from that moment. And hopefully he's a part of that crew. That's one of the advantages that I think the Blackhawks will have tonight, is not only do they have a lot of experience in playing in Game 7s, but you have a wealth of guys in that room that are comfortable if the puck is on their stick with the series on the line. And that's a question that the Blues are going to have to answer tonight. But Panarin, a lot of guys in the Blackhawks, they seem very comfortable in that moment.
Judd, there was a moment in Game 6 where Panarin went out on the ice, giving the Blackhawks 6 men on the ice, which even though they like to do is kind of illegal by hockey standards. You want 5 guys on the ice. But they were announcing
wait a minute, you could pull your goalie, though.
You could pull your goalie. That's true. But in this particular instance, they weren't. So he went out early, and they said, Doc Emmerich said, you could see the team yelling at him to get back in the box, not to go out on the ice yet. He speaks very little English. What exactly were they yelling at him to let him? Was it just nyet, nyet, nyet over and over again? What were they yelling at him?
Well, he may speak very little. He understands a lot. Like,
does
if
he?
You talk to him, he'll nod his head. And even Joel Quenneville said, I want to say it was a few weeks ago, because I saw the two of them having a conversation on the ice, and Panarin was laughing, and I know Joel doesn't speak Russian, that, you know, he's starting to get to a point where he is understanding more and more, and as Joel said, apparently he understands well enough that he thinks I'm funny.
Perfect.
That is really funny. Corey Crawford got his bell rung last game, got hit really hard with the puck, and also looked like he got knocked in the head a little bit. Everything cool with Corey?
Yeah, he's fine. I think the play that you mentioned, he got winded. There's a kid on St. Louis named Colton Parayko, huge, 6'6", 220 pounds, and he's got a wicked shot, as hard as there is, really, in the National Hockey League. And on that sequence, Troy Brower, as he was cutting across the crease, got a piece of Corey Crawford, and he couldn't really set himself for the shot from Parayko, and it just drilled him right in the sternum. And so he went down. He lost his breath there for a little bit. I've talked to a number of goalies. That will happen during the course of a game, but he's fine and he's ready to go.
Now, the puck was live at the time, and he just kind of doubled over, and they blew a whistle. Is that a common thing, Judd? I don't remember ever seeing that, where a referee just goes, based on his condition, I'm going to call a quick timeout.
Well, you have to remember a couple of things. First of all, who had possession of the puck? And the other thing is, the referees have the discretion, whether it's a goaltender or another player on the ice, if he thinks that player is hurt or in jeopardy of getting hurt, If the play continues, he can blow the whistle and stop the play.
Okay, that's what we saw the other night, then.
And he still made a couple of stops.
Oh, yeah.
Even though he was doubled over.
Yeah.
He's been amazing. And as we heard Coach Q say on Steve Cochran's show this morning, they need focus and attention to detail and confidence, which they totally have gotten back. It's obvious. I'm feeling very confident, but not cocky about tonight, the Blackhawks winning over St. Louis in Game 7.
Yeah, I mean, well, what's the scene going to be like at your house? Both of you, where are you guys watching the game?
Grant Mulvey's tree fort.
Good old number 22.
Yep.
I got my crazy little mojos that are up and ready to roll. It's the Crawford mask that is pointed towards the TV. There's a little sock puppet monkey that has a Blackhawk sweater and a little bear with a Blackhawk sweater. And then, Kevin, our producer, of course, what are you going to do at game time?
Put on my Winter Classic Taves.
See, that's what's happening.
Sweet. Well, if you're going to do that, Kevin, you got to put on the eye black. If you're going to wear the jersey, then you got it has to be as though you're playing.
I like
have
that
it
idea.
Because yeah. Kevin's performing in the Rocky Horror Picture Show right before the game, so he'll be fine.
Let's do the time warp again.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Well, their backs were against the wall. They still are tonight, but I think some breathing room can happen because they were really looking. They were looking like the Hawks the last two periods of the last game.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I'm not going to need too much coffee to get ready for today's game. I think the heart will be pumping pretty solid once 7:30 hits.
We can't wait. Judd, thanks so much for joining us. We're so looking forward to tonight's Game 7.
All right. Thanks, Wendy and Bill.
Take care.
Go Hawks.
It's our pal Judd Surratt. We'll take a quick break. Steve with the news, and then more words from your Merriam-Webster Dictionary. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. A little while ago, we were talking about how the Merriam-Webster dictionary, that's your unabridged dictionary, and they've been putting this out for years and years and years and years. Every year, it changes a little bit. They add more words. The English language is constantly changing. This year, there's over 2,000 new either words, or they've taken existing words and added secondary or beyond meanings to those words. We're checking to see if you know what some of these words mean. What about waggle dance? That's in the dictionary this year, Wendy. Waggle dance. What is that?
That is what a little dachshund or wiener dog does when it's happy when you come home from work.
Is that what that means? Is that a waggle dance? Just the dog is happy to see you.
That would be my guess.
Kevin, you think that's what waggle dance is? No?
He has no.
That's all I got. I mean, I can't think of anything else.
Steve, anything on waggle dance?
He's left.
I have not left. I'm sitting right here. What'd you say? No, I'm kidding. That's when you take your dog for a walk and you end up walking the same way as she does.
That's not bad. It's incorrect. Mm. Now, I thought a waggle dance was that thing that kids do when they have to go to the bathroom.
That's a wiggle dance.
That's a wiggle dance? Is that what that is?
There's a difference between wiggling and waggling.
See, I can't tell the subtleties between those two. Here's what Merriam-Webster says. It's a series of figure eight movements performed by bees to indicate the direction and abundance of a distant food source. That is a waggle dance.
Is that what our forefathers did when, you know, this way to the lion,
yes.
This way to the hunt.
Yes.
Dancing in figure eights.
Yep.
That was way more scientific than I expected.
You didn't know there'd be bees involved?
No.
Bees,
no,
me neither. Waggle. Birds waggle.
Keep going. I love this song. Now, here's one, and I think I know who invented this word, but they're not credited for this. The word is, it's hyphenated, by the way, it's meet cute. M-E-E-T hyphen C-U-T-E, meet cute. I'm almost positive I know who invented this word.
I've never heard of it. I don't know what it means.
You don't know
when
at all?
When you meet someone who's cute?
No. Nope. Kevin, you?
It's M-E-E-T, not M-E-A-T.
M-E-E-T.
Yeah, I thought it was meat cute meant, you know, wow, that's some hot meat.
That's a good-looking sirloin.
Cute. Yeah. No.
That's a good-looking rump roast.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking of, like, barbecue.
Baby got rump roast.
Nothing. Steve, you want to take a guess on this?
No clue.
It is a cute, charming, or amusing first encounter between two potentially romantic partners. Now, I can't prove this, but I believe that the late, great Roger Ebert invented this phrase. I'm almost positive. Because he would always talk about how in a movie you had two people who you wouldn't think under normal circumstances would get together, you know, they bump into each other in some weird way, and that's a meet cute. He would always talk about that in his writings about romantic comedies. I'm almost positive he invented that phrase.
And I don't understand what it is again.
It means you're meeting somebody in a cute way, in a way that isn't normal. You're not meeting them because you work with them. You're not meeting them because somebody fixed you up.
It says the term has existed at least since the early 40s.
Oh, it's been around that long? Then it was not Roger Ebert. I take back the credit from him.
Meet cute. That's weird.
But that's like a standard movie thing of two people who...
Like when Harry Met Sally.
Yeah, that's a good example. That's a great example. Yeah. Dipsogenic. If something is dipsogenic, what are we talking about?
Dipsogenic.
Like a really good-looking bowl of guacamole?
We're laughing at him, but you're not far off.
Yes.
You're not far off.
So it means it's a clean dip that no one has double dipped.
No, it doesn't mean that.
Yes.
Thank you.
It does not mean that. But guacamole could potentially be dipsogenic. It's an adjective.
It's when your appetizer is so good looking you take a picture of it.
I get what you did there.
No.
Photogenic and
that.
The dip.
Dipsogenic has to do with something that produces thirst.
Oh, that is so dipsogenic, it makes me want a beer.
Yeah.
Is that like in reference to food or like
salty?
It could be anything. It says in the brain there are peptides that elicit a dipsogenic response. It could be an increased salt appetite. It could be vasopressin released. And then
so
you
like,
have a...
Like if you have nachos, that's dipsogenic because
right.
you're going to want to have a beer with it.
Right.
But is it like the same concept, like if I were to go for a run, does that make me dipsogenic?
Or is
that activity dipsogenic?
One is like kind of Pavlovian, believe.
Making
where,
you salivate.
Yeah, the other one, if you're thirsty, you've sweat out, you know, some electrolytes.
Right. So, no, circle does not get the square, Kevin.
But someone
sorry.
Told me that you're a meat cute dipsogenic.
And that's a compliment.
That from your fiance, Sarah.
Thanks.
Look at how Kevin's getting all blushy on us. what does this mean? I don't even know if I'm saying this right. I'm going to try to say it. Geekly, which is G-I-C-L-E-E.
Gicle, yeah, it's a...
Is it gicle? Is
I
that
don't
what
know
it is?
How you say it. It's a painting, isn't it, of some sort?
It's a process by which high-quality prints, P-R-I-N-T-S, not the singer who died the other day, a process by which high-quality prints are produced using an inkjet printer.
Yeah, so it's like you take a professional photo, and this is like a really good frameable copy of it. In other words, I believe that's called stealing.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, but
How did you know that word? When did you hear... But somebody you know used that word at some point? Somebody said, that's gicle.
It's a gicle print.
I've never heard of that.
Because I shop on Etsy.
Boy, that's impressive. I had never heard of that before. Urban fantasy. What is urban fantasy? That is being brought into the dictionary for the first time this year, the Merriam-Webster unabridged.
Having a backyard.
having your neighbor in your backyard. That would be an urban
That's
fantasy.
That's more urban fantasy. It's a genre of imaginative fiction featuring supernatural characters or elements.
Magic the Gathering.
In an urban setting, not unlike...
Oftentimes, I host urban fantasy nights.
See?
Sure.
And who attends these, Kevin? Can you tell us?
Me and my fellow wizards.
You're on the air. Do you know that?
What?
What's that called again? Urban fantasy?
Urban fantasy.
So people who get together and play games like that. Dungeons and Dragons, Magic the Gathering,
I guess that's
Heroclix.
Kind of urban fantasy. What's the one called that where you write fiction...
Dungeons and Dragons?
No.
I just said that.
There's some phrase for this where you write sexually charged fiction based on characters that aren't usually like if you wrote a
What do you
like
do
if you wrote
at
a
your
short
coffee
story,
clubs?
If you wrote a short story about the people from the Andy Griffith Show.
That's a
different
sexy
type.
Version.
Yeah, that's not urban. That's a different type.
Oh, Barney does it to me, boy.
But there's a name for that.
That holster?
Sick.
Whoo.
Do you know what I mean, Kevin? There's some name for that, though, right?
I know. In
fantasy?
Rule 34.
It's like fan fiction, but it's got like a...
Cosplay?
No.
Costco?
No. No, it's neither of those. No. But I know there's a word for it, but it's like fan fiction, but it's more, there's like more to it than that. Because people do that. People go, you know, like what's going on behind the scenes on the Enterprise and Star Trek. Or Friends, what happened, you know, what weren't they showing us when they were on television? But there's some...
Writing dirty?
No, I get... Well, kind of. But there's a more formal term for it.
I know Rule 34. Are you thinking of that?
What is that?
Rule 34 is if it exists, there's adult material of it.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. What does this word mean? Now, this has been in the dictionary.
Like fantasy writing, you mean? Like the women who write the fantasy books? Is that kind of where you're going with this? And we just can't think of it?
Yeah.
How come Mr. Literary is not answering?
Steve had to take himself out of the game. He's a scratch.
he had a scratch.
Right. All right. Let me give you one more. Which of these is good? Hella. H-E-L-L-A. What does that mean? If somebody says the word hella, what are they describing?
That's easy.
What?
Do you know, Wendy?
Like a hell of a good time.
Yeah, or like it's like hella good, the song hella good. It's extremely.
That's really, it exactly. Yeah.
Something, hella good, what's that?
That means like a hell of a lot of.
Well, I know what that means. That song, though. Who does that song?
Your favorite, no doubt.
Oh.
Ain't no hella back girl?
Sort of.
Is that
of.
What it is? All right, so if something is described as hella, it is an adverb, and it means very or extremely.
Like there's a dip, the hell of a good onion
dipsogenic.
But that's hell of a good, right? That's
no, it's not, hella.
Oh, it's just hella? It is? Yeah. All right, so somebody could be, well, you could be anything. You could be hella scared. You could be hella excited. It just means to a new extreme,
that's
very
called
or extremely.
Lazy. Say hell of a.
Of course.
What's the difference? It's one syllable.
I know. Wouldn't
erotic fan fiction? Is that what you're thinking of?
Yeah, but there's some...
Really? Because who are you thinking of?
Hella fantasy? Hella
helicopter?
No, that's separate. No. No, but there's some phrase for that. There's some...
Like Fabio or like what he was in, fantasy?
No.
Erotic fantasy?
They are erotic fantasies, but... It's specific to like let's say your favorite show. What's your favorite TV show?
I don't know.
I know Seinfeld. You like The X-Files or all Seinfeld. Right. All right. So if you spend time writing sexually charged short stories about the cast of Seinfeld and what goes on when you're not seeing them on TV, that's what it is. But there's some phrase for that.
Sick?
Sick is the phrase for that. Yeah.
Sherry!
That's what it is. All right. A quick break, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, a lot of people are trying to help me out. There's a phrase, and nearly everybody's using the same phrase. For some reason, I think it's a different one, but I could be wrong. And here's what it is. It's when you're a fan of a certain TV show or a movie, so you decide, I'm going to write my own version of it and make it way, way sexier than they did. I like Scooby-Doo, but there's not enough sexual contact in it, so I'm going to... Add that to the mix a little bit.
Cheapening it.
I was just using it as an example. I would not with Scooby-Doo. The Jetsons I would do, but not Scooby-Doo. So what is that called? And nearly everybody is saying the same thing, right?
Fan fiction.
They're all saying fan fiction, huh? All right. I thought it had a more deliberate name than fan fiction.
Erotic fan fiction?
That could be it. Let's go with that. Now, as I was looking for the name online, and I thought I knew this, and it turns out, according to this story on... Where is this? Business Insider? Yeah, Business Insider. It's true. The novels, the 50 Shades of Grey novels that have been written by E.L. James started out as exactly that, as fan fiction. She, the author E.L. James, was a big fan of the Twilight series, but wanted them to have a little more sexual content to them. So she wrote them that way and put them on a website called fanfiction.net, and people read them and said, hey, you could turn these into a book.
And that's where 50 Shades of Grey came from?
That's the genesis of 50 Shades of Grey.
Here's an idea. Don't write it down. Act it out.
That's a good idea. You could do that.
Somebody thinks
you could do that.
Either fan fiction or Penthouse Forum.
Penthouse Forum. That's what it is. Thank you, whoever sent that in. That's exactly what it is.
Everybody says they shorten it to fanfic.
Now, I've heard that phrase too. Yeah. Fanfic. Get yourself some, Wendy.
I don't need it. If you can make, you
get
know
yourself
what?
Some McHale's Navy fanfic.
If
watch
you
the
can
fun.
Make some Candy Crush fanfic, Then you're talking.
Now we're talking.
Not little candy falling down.
Right.
Maybe some other items.
Right. Candy's falling down. Your pants are falling down. Now you got a show.
Well,
now you got a program. All right.
Good golly.
All right. In a little while, Ro and Anna will be by to explain to us what's coming up on their show. And then, apparently, the Blackhawks are playing in a hockey game later on tonight.
Is it a 7:30 puck drop?
7:30.
That's a weird time. And that does that mean 7:42?
Actually, yes. Even though they say, as we've learned in the past, when they say during the playoffs, the puck drops at this time, you can add 10 or 15 extra minutes to that.
I don't want to stoke the fire. I'm trying to find the actual tweet, though, but Marian Hossa is on record as saying he's happy it's a 7:30 start.
Well, 7:30 is not a bad start time. It's when you start at 8:30 and beyond. That's when it gets to be a late night. But a 7 or 7:30 start is ideal. That's what you want. That's perfect.
I think it should be 7:30 a.m. You want to get it over with. You don't want to sit around all day and wait for it to happen.
Right.
It just gets you more anxious about it.
They're there for the morning skate anyway.
Yeah, just make it a game
then.
Play
the game early. I'm not sure they'd get the same amount of people watching or listening that early.
It's okay. It's in St. Louis. We don't care how many people are there.
I know, but we want to see it and hear it.
We could have gotten it in before we went on the air.
That's too early.
We could have done it live on the air.
All right. It's a 7:30-ish puck drop. 7:42.
It's really been typically late, which is okay because, you know, sometimes you have to get things figured out and ordered for dinner.
That's right.
You know, Northbrook is the next stop on the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate. And you know who's going to be there.
Well, the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis, they'll be broadcasting live from Pinstripes in Northbrook this Wednesday, April the 27th. They start at 3 and they go till 7.
You could stop by on the way home if you so chose.
I might.
You'll have chances to win prizes, including complimentary bocce and bowling. Enjoy half-price appetizers, pizzas, flatbreads, and they're going to be giving away a pair of tickets that will get you inside the Auditorium Theater for the 2016 NFL Draft.
Here's what you might want to do. Visit the events page at WGNRadio.com. All the details are there. It's the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour. It's all presented by Allstate, Chicago's own good hands.
And quick break, and shall we talk to them?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN.